go. Head On with Bob Kincaid. 3 hours of conversation, cussing, and a discussing with America's only born and bred Southern liberal talk host. Head On with Bob Kincaid is brought to you each night by Coal River Mountain Watch. Coal River Mountain Watch invites you to become part of the solution, part of a sustainable future, part of the uprising against mountaintop removal. Coal River Mountain Watch, CRMW.net. And now, from high in the hills of beautiful West Bicod, Virginia, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head On Radio Network.
Well, howdy! Welcome to the Tuesday night edition of the program. Live programming on the horn. I was remiss in not letting you know last night, and I apologize for it, that Guy James will not be live this week. He is still attending to the family medical necessities that are keeping him away from the microphone, so please bear with him in the next couple of days. I spoke with Guy this morning, and he says he will be back behind the mic as soon as he possibly can. He's itching to get back behind the mic. You know, well, Guy and I were sort of the same animal in that regard. Too long away from the microphone, and we start to sort of just involuntarily twitch and vibrate. You know, it's not a pretty sight, but Guy will be back as soon as he can. Hope you enjoyed the rerun. And Guy, if you're listening, the chat room sends hugs to you and Bess. So, good. We're square on that. Programming note. There will be no live programming on the evening, this evening of Thursday the 12th, unless I get back and start something up late just to report back to you on what was going on, or unless I work something out with, say, John Fox to maybe broadcast remotely. And I'll tell you why. I mean, I'm not just going to leave you in the dark on this. Thursday evening, there is a so-called informal hearing that is being put on by the Department of Environmental Protection at the local school here regarding the permit renewal application for this environmental community-killing nightmare above my hometown, the town nearest which we live and wherein my children, two of them still, go to school. This is, of course, a mountaintop removal job that stands to destroy the tourism industry in this county, which has provided the primary transition away from the boom and bust cycle of coal. On top of the mountain, some of the photos of which you may have seen at the website at some point or another, they have created, well, if you look at it from the New River Gorge Bridge, it looks a little funny on the ridge, but they managed to hide it from view of the tourists who make this such a magnet, who are drawn to this area like a magnet because of its supposedly untouched beauty. But that view of that mountain is, in fact, the mountaintop removal, the mountain removal version of a Potemkin village. It is not what it appears to be, because immediately behind that little ridge is a nightmare. A poisonous, toxic nightmare, aided and abetted by blasting that shakes homes as far away as as mine and as this studio. So we've got and the permit's up for renewal, and we really, really don't want it renewed. It shouldn't be renewed. They stand to release into the river. This sits very near the confluence of the New and the Gauley River, which form the Kanawha River. That's Kanawha, K-A-N-A-W-H-A, H-A, Kanawha, yet another Native American word, probably meaning river of death, as in, you go down beautiful river, white man, you're going to love it so much you'll never come back. Yeah. But at any rate, it will eventually toxify this mine. It will toxify the Gauley and the Kanawha, and probably find its way into the New as well. It will poison the life in the river, and in turn will poison the people who live near the river. It will poison water supplies. It will poison wells. It will do everything that mountain removal coal extraction does, in short. They're working a 5,000-acre permit now. They have realistic access to another 20,000. They can, in fact, murder this town where it sits. So we hope to show up and let the Department of Environmental Protection, otherwise known as a wholly owned subsidiary of the coal industry in this state, know that we object and we're not going to take it lying down. I say that it may be advisable to perhaps try to do some remote broadcasting for one reason and one reason only, but this is entirely dependent on John, because Agnes and I will both be there. We don't want our children there for reasons I will get to. But it might be good to have something live going of this. Because I was informed, and I got to tell you, I'm a little shaken behind the microphone this evening. I was informed a few minutes before I went on the air that the coal mob are planning to bus in their thugs to this meeting in hopes of filling the room so that no one who lives in this community who is affected by this nightmare may speak. It will take a Herculean effort for us to be able to do so. Can you imagine that, being so determined to shut down dissent that you will spend the thousands of dollars it will take to bus in the Fockers, the Friends of Coal, to a little tiny community that's not even a dot, barely a dot on the map? It's a post office. It's a little factory that makes salsa. It's a drugstore, a barber shop, a couple of convenience stores, a little grocery, a pizza joint, a place that sells T-shirts, and a little bric-a-brac shop that sells tourist knickknacks. That's the town. It's a beer joint, a couple of gas stations. It's a cemetery a couple of hundred years old. And it poses a threat to the coal mob. So they will spend thousands of dollars to bus in people who don't live here, who have no connection to this community, who don't give a tinker's damn what happens to this community, all to make sure that the people who are affected by this assault are rendered mute. That's my Thursday. So, I don't know. Hopefully I'll talk to John at some point. Maybe we can work it out where I'll take one of the little gizmatics with us. And we'll get through one way or the other. Time constraints and John's schedule permitting. What do you do in a situation like that? Just asking. You know, this is a conversation that we have. I don't have any baldness remedies to hustle. All we have is the input that we give to each other. How would you respond to that? Knowing the gang of thugs are hell-bent on shutting your mouth, how would you respond? That's my query to begin the evening. 10 minutes past the hour, and we do have other stories to go into. We have stories that we must go into this evening. We've got another classic case of a buried lead from a CNN story coming up. Your responses and your thoughts about last night's press conference are more than welcome. I'd like to hear those. And my apologies for the fact that it's the archive is still, well, I don't know, maybe it's up by now. We had some issues because I ran long, and that throws the system into chaos. But that archive will be available. Please don't give up on it. Let's start this evening with the phones, and let us go thereunto. Hey, welcome to the program.
Well, how you doing, Bob?
Reverbo, how are you, brother?
So what is a tinker, and why do they give a damn?
Ah, well, a tinker is sort of, I think that was one of those door-to-door salesman types. And it's not a tinker's dam as in D-A-M-N curse. It's a tinker's dam as in the wife of a tinker.
Like a tinker's dame?
Yeah, but it's dam. Just like Grendel's dam.
So when someone says, I don't give a tinker's dam about that.
Right.
They mean that
they are not cursing.
No, they're not. They wouldn't even give you a door-to-door salesman's wife.
Or mother.
Is that what they're saying?
Yeah.
Okay.
Now that you've sort of called me on it, I wonder if that's a sexist statement. It may have to be pulled from the repertoire.
And also, people use that word, you know, what are you doing out there, you know, Cousin Wally? Well, I'm just out here, I'm tinkering in the garage.
Yeah.
Just tinkering.
Well, now we have to go and look. You have...
I have these books. They're just not handy by the phone. I love this. What is it called? Entomology, or is that the study of butterflies? I always get those confused.
Well, see, okay, now I'm being proven completely wrong. Because the free dictionary says the smallest degree or amount. Something of little value, but I'm trying to find the etymology here, and there's a discussion, apparently, Reverbo, as to whether or not this refers to a small dam, D-A-M, to hold solder made by tinkers when mending pans.
A tinker is like a metallurgist?
A tinker's dam is, according to 1877 in the Practical Dictionary of Mechanics, a tinker's dam is a wall of dough raised around a place which a plumber desires to flood with a coat of solder. The material can be but once used, being consequently thrown away as worthless.
It's a mold.
Okay, so the sexist thing's out, so it gets to stay in the repertoire.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we were way off the track. We door to door salesmen.
Well, I mean, it still is. A tinker, tinkers, grinders, that kind of thing. Were people held in little repute in the 19th century? Because they were transient and deemed to be prone to mischief and dishonesty because they were not rooted in a community?
Okay, and there's another good word for that. When you're itinerant, there's some great word and it's an Aristotelian word. Do you remember that one? When people who move around a lot, it's described because Aristotle used to walk around when he lectured and what did Aristotle do? He gave advice, you know. Aristotle.
Yeah.
He's talking.
Well, yeah. Socrates was more in that vein, but because Aristotle was more prone to looking around at bugs and beetles and plants and flowers and stuff.
There's some old great word that means that comes from that. These people who walked around a lot. But good. I'm listening to great. You start up the show with this incredibly serious issue with coal people, and now we're into our etymology. You gotta love this show, man.
I hope. I have a hell of a fine time doing it.
Today, if anybody had some loose cash lying around, it turned out to be a good day to get back in the stock market.
Yeah, it did. It laid a stinker today, didn't it?
See, this is why I should not be. It's a good thing that I'm not allowed to invest other people's money, only my own. Because I would have sworn that, you know, their boy Timmy today, I mean, he's got their back, and he lets them all know that, hey, not to worry, we're going to drop more dollar bills out of the helicopter on you. You know, we're just going to.
As God is my witness, I thought turkeys could fly.
You know, I guess there's supposed to be some better restraints or constraints on this money or rules, but I can't really find them anywhere. Mm. And I would have thought the response on Wall Street would have been, hey, man, yeah, the fix is in once again. Great.
Yeah, but this no. You're now for a guy who follows the market, Reverbo, you're not in touch with the zen of it. Because this is the part where the helicopter. All right, the helicopter is hovering. They've got the bags of cash open and they're getting ready to dump them. Don't look excited.
Damn.
Sell now. Buy it back cheap.
Oh, they pulled the old psycho switcheroo.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, this is once again. This is why I'm not a tax advisor.
Come on. Now, you don't have to be a tax advisor or an investment broker to figure this out. Anybody who's ever owned a cat can see this from a mile away.
Yeah, but these people wear their.
I mean, let's say you've got a nice piece of ahi tuna. You know, the really good stuff. And you've got a nice sized chunk of it, and you toss it down in the cat's dish, and the cat's standing there watching you do it. And you're thinking, "Wow, this is so cool! I'm being so cool to my cat. Look at this big. This is really expensive, rare tuna. Maybe it's Toro, the really rare, fatty stuff. Mmm, yum! Best sushi in the world."
Mm.
And you toss that chunk of raw tuna down in the dish, and the cat just looks at you like, "So." And you get as a person with a cat, you get this profound sense of non-gratification because you know if you had tossed that down to your dog, the dog the molecules of the tuna wouldn't even have landed on the dog's taste buds long enough for the dog to know what it was. Just that it was incredibly grateful that something had come to you from its hand, or come to it from your hand.
He would have snapped it out of the air before it hit the ground.
Right, it wouldn't have made it.
But this is where I've got a problem with comparing the Wall Street fanatics to cats. I think they're more like dogs. How can they possibly hold in all that excitement?
Because they've already gotten $350 billion or more. And the only way they think they get more is, you know, this time through, because last time through they were the dog. Snapping it out of the air. I mean, Jesus. I mean, we saw it, didn't we, Reverbo? I mean, we saw City and its tent city at the Super Bowl. AIG throwing humongous resort parties that cost umpty bajillion dollars. And then there's this Thane creep at Merrill Lynch. I mean, we saw them do what they do, and they've sort of pulled back now and said, yeah, okay, they're on to us.
Suggesting that with all the influence on politics and on government, all the influence that the total financial domination of our country, that these people had to act worthy?
Oh, no, not worthy, just disinterested.
Oh, just
blasé. Oh, dear, Muffy, they're pouring more money on us. Whatever shall we do?
Just another couple hundred billion, yawn.
Yeah, you know, but see, that's the rest of the analogy, Reverbo. After you're done watching the piece of tuna in the cat's dish, And after the cat is absolutely certain that you're not watching anymore for any signs of gratitude on the cat's part, if you sneak back in, you'll see the cat just sitting there being very ferocious and feral and cat-like. Just, you know how it is, a cat going through me. Eating that tuna for all it's worth. And that's what'll happen in a couple of days from now when you see the Dow kind of trending back upward. See, I'm looking at the online, you know, just under the phone, you know, it's the guy in the blue Dow Jones jacket standing next to the yellow phones. His arms are crossed like a cigar store Indian or something. And the text underneath it says, stocks slumped today with the Dow ending at a three-month low as the government's bank rescue plan failed to reassure investors burned by the 14-month-old recession.
Failed to reassure them.
Well, yeah. The
unreassured, of course.
And but where?
Reassured people were the bank stocks. Yeah. All right.
But I mean, couldn't they just as easily have written, stock slump today with the Dow ending at a three-month low, as an ugly case of mid-February malaise struck Wall Street, making it not feel like doing much today? I mean, doesn't that kind of verbiage have the same essential impact or meaning? I mean, I'm guessing that the stocks that fell for a variety of reasons. You know, is it Dostoevsky who wrote, all happy families are happy in the same way, but every dysfunctional family is dysfunctional in different ways? Isn't this that? I mean, can't you look at any given stock that fell today and say, well, that one fell because the CEO broke his ankle at Stade skiing last weekend. That stock's going down because the CEO's just announced cancer. That CEO went down because the price of fuel is going back up. But no, that's far too complicated for the for-profit media to put into the sort of the mindset of America. So instead they say, the government's rescue plan failed to reassure investors. Now, ask a follow-up question, if I may, Reverbo. Would it have been written that way if Dim Leader was still at the helm?
Excellent question. You gotta wonder. I don't know. I was an investor who was quite buoyed by the day.
Did you take a bath at the end of it? Did you take a bath?
No, I dove in. I was watching it all day. I couldn't believe it. I thought for sure he'd give his speech, and they'd just rub their greedy hands together again. And
no, greedy hand rubbing comes Thursday.
Yeah, it comes Thursday. Yeah, it was more than a little not being excited. The thing dropped at 1.400 points.
Well, see that's the point I'm trying to reach, Reverbo. If this had still been the Dim Leader administration, it would have said, stocks fell today on a series of profit-taking moves by Wall Street traders responding to the government's bailout plan. It would have been profit-taking, and the word correction would have appeared in the text somewhere.
Oh, sure, the self-fulfilled prophecy media, yeah.
I mean, I don't mean to appear too cynical, but, you know, I mean, I've been involved I sat in for a few weeks on a poker game once upon a time. And I kept finding myself walking out the door with the insides of my pockets turned inside out. You know, just a friendly poker game, mind you. And then along about week four, I looked under the table and it looked like river dance going on under there. And I was the only one not tapping. Well, that's Wall Street. It's a dodge.
Yeah.
And, you know, I don't mean to get all, you know, 19th century on anybody and have any, you know, I'm not saying put your money in the mattress or anything. But after 8 years of dim leader, Reverbo, this is a crooked game. It was rigged. It was rigged when George Bush came into office. It was rigged when creepy little lick spittles like Chris Cox were put in charge of the SEC. This is not a game where people, no, this is where people who have been forced into the market with their 401ks and things like that are being, they're being bent backwards over Wall Street's altar stone like some sort of, sacrificial victim in ancient Mesoamerica to have their hearts ripped out.
Well, yeah, and remember that they didn't used to be allowed to stick your 401k and my 401k into all these speculative deals. That they used to have. That's why they only kind of gradually kind of flubbered along at making 3% and 4% every year.
Right.
There were never these crazy spikes and.
And that's why you have to go back to Ronald Reagan. And look at the wholesale theft of pension plans and understand that, you know, that was what, you know, the so-called Reagan Revolution was fueled on larceny. Just was.
Yeah, and it's still, I don't, you know, I took my bath. That's why I'm with what little I have left. That's why I'm messing around and watching this, these graphs all day, trying to figure out, you know, maybe if we're getting maybe towards the bottom. It's hard to say, really. I'm tending to think we are kind of getting towards the bottom.
Well, it tanked down to 382 points. What it lost 4.6%. What was the bottom line number? What did the Dow stop at?
Just under 8. It was about 79.
Yeah. Okay. 78.88.
You got it right on the money.
Yeah.
And so it was just pitiful all day long. It'd be interesting to see what happens. This kind of stuff is all different now. It used to be people talk about you know, long term and short term. As long as Wall Street keeps being on this bonus system, which evidently we're still going to get to be on, and evidently all the CEOs and all these managers are all going to stay in their jobs, the ones that got us into this are all going to get to stay. Oh, God. See, I don't know, man.
Private Pyle is being promoted to General, Reverbo.
But this is President Obama. Why is he shouldn't be listening to these Wall Street hacks. Anyway. So they all get to stay, and you know, what I'm getting at is the timeline has all been changed on this. I think these people think in terms of like 6 months or a year anymore. I don't think they think in terms of 10 years at all. They're thinking about their next year's bonus.
Right, because buy and hold, you know, that ancient and most honorable of Wall Street strategies, buy and hold, Reverbo, is, to say the least, passé and quite possibly antediluvian.
Oh, yeah. These forecasts are like 6 months, 12 months. I mean, especially when the market is like moving at like 400 points, 600 points a day. That's just crazy. There's another thing that is driving me crazy, and that is this whole idea where people get their minds wrapped around this idea of tax relief, right, of tax credits and you know, lower taxes, instead of wrapping their mind around the idea of jobs and pumping money in at the bottom. They keep getting suckered into this tax relief bullshit. It's a magic word. And, of course, as we know, it is never stimulated. That's not going to get us out of the problem we're in now. Tax relief has an interesting to legislate. Tax relief and goof around with the tax system is a way of equalizing the wealth in your country, but it is not a way to blast yourself out of a depression. But everybody seems to be all keen on it, like it's.
That's because the voting public for the last 29 years now. Whew, wow, that's a whole bunch of my life. The voting public has been very successfully hypnotized by the right wing because they understood the necessity to control the message, that anything that doesn't contain the phrase tax cuts is probably something verging on communist. And I mean that seriously. You've got Democrats, you've got Republicans. You know, I'm sure the anarcho-syndicalists out there are working on a tax cut package. Because the American people it's a thing that lives, that came in our ears and lives in our brain. And very few people have not, have not swigged at that trough of Kool-Aid. But any economists left who think that tax cuts stimulate the economy, they believe all kinds of crazy things, like rich people trickle wealth down to the poor who gladly sup at it as it dribbles from the table.
Maybe the fix, whenever Obama's involved, you wonder if we've all been just like hoodwinked by all this, because you do. I am worried about these people, these people who are advising him. This is a good one too. I don't know if you noticed, but the old Maverick has I think he's hallucinating. He's seriously hallucinating, because like last week he decided that the world, at least the country, wants to hear his totally ignorant comments that have to do with the stimulus package and the economy in general. Have you heard gotten some of the commentary and some of the evaluation from McCain?
I've seen snippets of it along the way, and frankly, it just drives me bananas.
Why does he feel the need that? Well, I guess that's the way he is. He felt the need to. Remember, he stopped his campaign right there in the middle because he had to get in.
Because he had to get back and be a senator. He had to get back to Washington. Get off my lawn.
This
one phrase, the one that drove me nuts, was generational theft.
Yeah, he's going, I don't know, boy, this is going to be the worst thing that ever happened to America. I'm just saying, and your alternative is what?
Yeah, well, I've got him here. Let's share this with the listening world, Reverbo. This is his appearance, Bomber John's appearance. It's only a minute or so long, on the Face the Schieffer or whatever it is on CBS.
Go for it.
Well, you have emerged as the main opponent, I think, of the Senate, the President's Economic Recovery Plan, at least the version that came up in the Senate. You offered another plan about half the size of this one. It was defeated on a straight party line vote. But I want to ask you, now that you have made your point, do you intend to support this plan? Because I think economists on all sides of this say something has got to be done here.
Well, I can't, Bob, and I can't because I think it's the greatest transfer of not only spending but authority and responsibility to government. I think it's massive. It's much larger than any measure that was taken during the Great Depression. I think it has policy changes in it which are fundamentally bad for America. For example, their Buy America provisions. That's protectionism. It didn't work at any time in our history. But most of all, because I think this can only be described as generational theft.
Really?
I can't. I'm just going to be sick. Well,
yeah, because that couple of trillion dollars down the rat hole in Iraq and Afghanistan, that wasn't generational theft.
No, and
patriotism.
Wars that are, you know, on the table that need to be jump started. I'm sure he's in favor of those, you know. But cranking up like jobs programs or, you know, building roads or schools. I don't know. I'm just wondering where. I think the man is just hallucinating. I can't.
Well, I think his Aricept has stopped working.
I like how what's his name referred to him as some sort of leading voice on the other side of this. I talk about oxymorons.
Well, this generational theft thing just drives me batty, Reverbo, because you want to talk about generational theft? Generational theft is when you don't provide the educational infrastructure for the next generation to have an education with which to carry on the work of the nation. That's generational larceny. When you don't support increased food for students in public schools who need full bellies in order to be able to learn, that's generational theft.
They're taking that out. Those are the things they're taking out.
Oh, yeah. Oh, it's gone. I mean, you know, the Senate side passed today. The Senate side of the stimulus package passed today after the cloture vote yesterday. So now it's off to conference committee. And I don't know if we're going to later see Obama Juan Kenobi do his magic or if he's got any magic to do. You know, last night in the press conference, he said if he made a mistake, he should have sent the stimulus bill with no tax cuts in it and then let the conservatives take credit for them. Is American government reduced to that level of sandbox 5-year-old politics?
I want to put in the tax cuts. I'm a Republican. You're being mean to me. I'm going to tell the American people.
That was a good line, though, Obama had. I got it. It is so nice to just have like an actual educated human being as the president. Have you heard any talk anywhere from anyone about, I know where we could get some money. Let's look over there. Looks like, what's that crazy looking building over there with like 5 sides? I think they have some over there.
Oh, no. Because it is round, that multi-sided building is surrounded by sacred cows.
I swear, somebody had better just drop.
But then again, you know, Ben Burch was putting out his wealth taxation theory last night, and we both agreed that the best way to cut Pentagon spending would probably be to let the rich pay for Pentagon spending. And then all of a sudden, you know, I think because you'd hear it from the Hamptons and Westchester and all over the Palm Beach and the Limbaugh estate. My friends, we have too many aircraft carriers. Do you have any idea how much it costs to keep these aircraft carriers afloat? And look at all those submarines. You can't even see half of them half the time. We have a bloated... But only if they were having to pay for it.
But they don't ever have to pay for them. I get to pay for them. I think it's $600 billion a year is roughly the Pentagon budget. Of course, not counting the war, never came out of that budget.
Oh, no. That was off budget.
It was off budget. And then we have the black operations, and we have all the Area 51 stuff. And it's probably a trillion. Well, throw in the war, and it's just the whole thing is obscene. But, yeah, you could get even $100 billion out of them.
Well, if you remember back to 2004 when Dennis Kucinich was changing the nature of the debate during the presidential primaries, he asserted, and rightly so, that you could take the waste in the Pentagon, the wasted money in the Pentagon, and fund national, single-payer, universal health care out of it.
I'm sure he got the calculator out. I'm sure he's absolutely right. And there's a man who's never afraid to say the truth, speak the truth.
No.
Jesus. Yeah, you can, I mean, just the money. People say, the military-industrial complex. This goes as Eisenhower's little...
Nah, he had another word in there.
Military-industrial complex?
When he first drafted it, it was the military-industrial congressional complex.
That's good. And every now and then...
They made him take the congressional part out because it hurt too bad.
Yeah. But isn't it really just the financial complex? Isn't that essentially, I mean, every now and then, like, the media drifts into that phrase, and religion, you know, fundamentalist Christianity drifts on into that complex. For the most part, it's just the money complex to me.
You can even distill it further and just wander back into the Old Testament there where it says, and this is one of those that's frequently misquoted, People say money is the root of all evil. No, 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 no. Lots of people do lots of good with money. The actual thing reads, the love of money is the root of all evil.
Now, that's a little bit different.
Yeah, it's a lot different, and basically it is it's an absolute distillation of what you just described. Because the one, you know, these war profiteers, they don't love this country. Come on, Reverbo. They don't love this country. They love money. They love their money. They love money above all things. Remember the words, Jack Welch, retired freak from General Electric, said, you know, these people deserve these bonuses because, you know, they didn't choose to go into public service. They didn't choose to be teachers. They chose to make money. Well, in other words, you're not a Wall Street investment banker if you are not madly, fetishistically, there's that word again, in love with coin. And I don't see how you can...
Yeah, well, I mean, there's no New World Order about any of this. This was all cooked up the first time that men got together and came up with the concept of banks. There's nothing new about any of this. This has just been going on since the dawn of time.
Yeah, anybody who had a pile of something and somebody else came and decided to take it away, that's it. Hasn't much changed. You know, we've changed the terms, we've changed the clothing, the costuming has changed. I mean, nobody's walking around with those ruffed collars around their necks, or for that matter, nobody's dancing around a monolith with somebody's thigh bone. But ultimately, the end, what follows from the equal sign, is the same thing. And, you know, we've got lots of fancy words for it. Greed, avarice, rapine. But they're all the same thing.
The people are just, I'm just worried that they're going to try to maintain the status quo, that all this is just designed to.
Well, they can try to maintain the status quo all they want to, Reverbo. The status quo is going away. Things are changing. And they're not and ultimately, you know, the far distant silver lining to this cloud is that it will be a better world if we work at it.
Well,
but there is going to be a hell of a lot of pain in this birth, and it may well be breach.
Yeah, you can say that it's just about time that this happened,
or that it was inevitable.
But when you keep dropping money on those from the helicopters, though, you're maintaining a system that's just hopelessly corrupt. And that's why I think that it really isn't so much, you cannot bribe me unless I agree to be bribed.
Well, there you go. You're off into the world of Fields' three basic rules. You can't cheat an honest man.
You can't cheat an honest man. I mean, if our government... I mean, there's one way to get rid of the lobbyists. There's one way to get rid of all the influence peddling. There's one way to get rid of all this shit. And it's simply to just show them, there's the door. Get out. I'm a public servant. I'm not a pimp. I'm not a hooker.
Yeah, there you go.
They're the pimps. These guys in Washington are hookers. Transaction fee. Used to be that there was like this pathetically small fee every time you traded a stock or traded a bond or traded a derivative. And of course somebody, I don't know, Reagan or somebody got rid of that. And some people think that you can easily raise $500 billion a year if you just bring that back. There's no cost to the taxpayers, no cost to anybody. Nobody ever even notices.
Yeah.
Right. And these are, you know, one more thing that they just, when no one was looking, they just kind of.
Well, yeah, and again, it goes back to what we were talking about earlier, Reverbo. This is a rigged game, and it's not going to be anything that anybody. You're not going to get rid of these swells and troughs, these waves and troughs that look like something in the middle of a Pacific typhoon. You're not going to get rid of these until you unrig the game, and that's going to take an act of profound will. Now, maybe the upside is that some of this can be done by not congressional action because there's, frankly, too many bought-off people in the Congress to ever accomplish that. But it might be able to be done by executive order. And then the question becomes one of whether or not Barack Obama has the nerve, because, see, he's already running for running for re-election. I mean, it's just the nature of the beast.
Yeah.
The question is one of whether he has the nerve to do that. And if he's going to do it, he'd best do it now so it can be forgotten by election time.
You're talking about making piles of little rocks out of big rocks, aren't you?
In part, yes. But I'm also talking about things as simple as imposing that transaction fee or imposing real penalties for crooks or even establishing close oversight for what happens to your money when it is given to the Wall Street banksters. This is not rocket science.
No, they know. Well, yeah, you deal with the Millionaires Club and the Senate, all of this. Well, there's not enough time. Hey, I had a question for you really quick. You have given out to your listening audience an alternate email address.
Yes.
You gave it out last week. Used to be we could kind of email you casually during the show with some joke or some piece of information and you would get. Is it a little more difficult to do that now?
No, heck no. No. It's sitting here right in front of me.
That's cool. The Gmail one is just cool.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It serves the same function.
All right. I just didn't know if that.
Yeah, we just pulled up a little too broke to continue maintaining that other web addy and the accompanying email address.
Okay. But you don't mind getting emails?
Oh, heck no. I want them. I was beginning to worry about you. I was wondering if you'd caught on to the new email, Addy.
Well, in the midst of sending you two, and both of them had to do with barbecue, I got the dreaded mailer demon coming back. You know, the return to sender thing.
Yeah, that must have gone to the head-on radio address, because you shouldn't get a demon coming back at you at bobkincaid@gmail.com.
No, I didn't. It was at the other one. And so one time we're going to have a conversation entirely about barbecue.
I can do 6 hours on that.
All right. Well, get to some other calls. It was always a pleasure to talk to you, and it doesn't get much more personal than this. I can't think.
Yeah, it's right up. It's right up at the other, at the directly at the end of my nose. It feels like now, and America's nose. And that's worth remembering in light of that old line about your rights end where my nose begins. My nose has begun.
Yeah, I hear you. All right, well, take it easy, my friend.
All right, later, Reverbo. Good to hear you.
Okay, same here. Bye.
Keep it personal. Bye. Critic at large, Reverbo. I always enjoy our conversations. And let's keep it rolling. Hey, welcome to the program.
So about the Friends of Coal.
Yeah.
Have you done what... Have you taken out any mail blasts to anybody like Ross Story? You need to start doing that. That's up for a precaution. And I was also looking at OVEC, the OVEC.org. Are you familiar with that?
Yeah, they're my friends.
Okay. Well, I was looking at a date from a year back, and they were talking about an incident they had. Yeah, you're going to need to do a lot of email blasts before that happens.
Well, that's what. Yeah, that's. I could have. I could have called the show tonight and just done all of that. But frankly, I've got to have these 3 hours, or I'll just bust.
Right. And if anyone's listening, if you know anyone or know any personal contacts at any of these sites and any of these progressive places on the web. You want to use that collect your $200 and pass go Monopoly card and get the story out. So,
well, you know, I'm glad you reminded me of that, David, because I've got a lot of new media journalists on my Facebook friends, and I will try to figure out. You know, I'm still on the learning curve, but I'll try to figure out a way to get some sort of a blast notification out.
Well, you know, speaking a little humor before I get to what I guess we can go back to this topic as well, because I have something to add to that, too. You know, Congressman Pete Hoekstra, it actually, there's a funny story where he was actually Twittering the schedule of what he was doing in Iraq.
I saw that. What a moron.
Yeah. Can you imagine if that was a Democrat, or just imagine if that was someone on Obama's staff?
There'd be impeachment hearings already.
Oh yeah, there would be impeachment hearings. So getting back to that Friends of Coal thing, I think you're going to have to put the word out to scare them that they're known already. I'll post something on some forums.
Cool, do that.
And get the word out on that. And also, you know, this brings an interesting thing about a topic. I don't know if anyone paid attention to this, but this is a landmark case which just happened. And it concerns all of us, and I'm not really, I think the people are bastards for doing it, but at the same time, this is something that concerns us all. And what it is there's a site called topics.com, and it has over hundreds of thousands of forums, and apparently someone posted a case regarding a rape case. And anonymous creeps can be anonymous. And they made a lot of comments that were very belligerent and foul and tempered and just a lot of crazies when you have that kind of anonymity. Well, here's what happened, and this is what it means to us now. The judge has ruled on this forum that all, when I say all, I'm serious, all the names, all the addresses will be revealed. And they will all, and they can all face federal charges. Doesn't matter if you just made like a simple comment. The fact that they're taking our privacy away, the judge took the went to the lengths of this. And here's the other thing: he told the founder of Topics that under no certain circumstances was there any the privacy issues would be revoked. And that set my signals up like, wow, do people even know what this means for forums now? Even if you participate in a forum, your information and everything's going to be passed to a federal judge just because he wishes it. And it's going to be a lot easier to get these people to bend because I don't think.
And there are more of these cases out there, David. Our buddy Freckles, Cassie.
Yeah.
Who has a blog of her blog is Freckle Political Teen Tidbits FrecklesCassie.wordpress.com.
Mm-hmm.
Sent me a link in the last few days that just sort of made her hair stand on end because she's an affected person within the sort of universe of this going on. A young woman with excellent grades
mm-hmm.
was suspended for a blog post that she made or a response that she made online that she made outside of school that was derogatory towards something within the school. I don't know. You know, Mrs. Schmertelhofer has funny hair. I don't know. But she the judge, the court thus far, has said, that's fine. You know, and it's in line with what I was talking about last night in terms of drug testing. You can show up completely unaltered, unaffected by any substances, but if you've got it in your bloodstream, you can lose your job over it. And what we're seeing here is a social blurring, and I find it very disturbing, a social blurring of the line between the time that belongs to you and the time that belongs to the company. Now, you know, if you're at work and you've got a blog and you post on your blog, I work for Acme and all the management staff at Acme are idiotic horses rear ends.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that's easily determinable, isn't it? And if they find out that you use the company computer, blah, 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 it's Katie bar the door and your ass is grass and they're a lawnmower. And I understand that principle. because I have a fundamental understanding of the First Amendment, that the First Amendment applies to governmental action to suppress speech and not at all private speech issues.
Mm.
If, on the other hand, you've got a blog and you're on your own computer, on your own bandwidth, on your own time, and you type that same thing, what the hell business does the company have determining that you can't do that? It's not a free speech issue. It's an uncompensated labor issue, because if they deem that you're on the clock 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, they by God need to be paying for it. And by the same token, to the extent that a school stands in loco parentis during school hours when a child is on school property, then that same level of duty should be applied to the school district and the school itself if, in fact, they want to moderate off-campus speech. And what you've got and what you've just described is something similar. And that is, you know, to what we have here is a dynamic tension. And this tension always exists with the rise of new technology. You know, there were Supreme Court cases about the newfangled radio box and about the telegraph. And every time a new technology comes along, the law is generally a generation behind it. You know, just when the telephone came out, the law was finally figuring out how it wanted to treat the telegraph.
Right.
Just when the telegraph was coming out, they were finally figuring out how they wanted to treat the Pony Express. It's inherent in the system itself. But by the same token, it's also a function of having a bunch of old people making laws for a new generation. Which goes back to what I was talking about with Reverbo about this generational theft concept.
Mm.
You know, people who have no concept of technology ought not be ruling on it. You know, there's where judges are concerned, we have this notion that they are eminently wise people because that's the way that Article 3 of the Constitution sets it up. But it turns out that what most federal judges are is people who have been quite successful at running under the radar, not getting their noses befouled, and being good little political hacks as lawyers. And that's who gets the appointments. Witness Alito, witness Roberts, witness Thomas, witness Scalia.
Right.
And virtually every single appointee of the Bush administration to the federal bench. These are not leading lights of the legal world. These are hacks. And they don't have the requisite level of understanding to comprehend a new and changing world.
And they're definitely not for individual expression.
I think if you did the homework on this case you've mentioned, David, you'd find that the judge was probably a, you know, right-wing horse's rear end.
Yeah, probably. And the other thing I wanted to mention was the fact that there's also, if you use blog template sites, I was reading this on a music industry site, there is evidence now of companies able to infiltrate select independent blogs and with a certain spyware erase information at a whim's notice. And it's happening on a few blog sites right now. And what's interesting about it is the fact that they don't have access to the site itself or the blog itself. It's just keywords that they can and somehow they can erase and omit information at a moment's notice, even if it's your own blog. So a lot of people are going to have to maybe look into getting off blog template sites if you do post stuff of a sensitive nature.
You mean like the blog spots and so forth?
Yeah, like that. You're going to have to get off those eventually, because a lot of people, you're going to have a lot of serious hacks, and you're going to have a lot of serious examples of that kind of omitting of information. And one thing I noticed, I was on a blog site like that. And it said, hey, what happened to my comment? It says, why did you erase it? And I mean, it's almost like a psyops, because it can create a war within the comment section. Because like, wow, you guys are like that. You erased my comment. And you know, it goes back to what Rumsfeld was saying about we need to create a psyops of the internet.
And, you know, just to, they have.
Maybe. Yeah, I mean, or the companies have taken note to it and decided to go head first or right into the water of this and not even care about any legality or morality of it. And I can definitely see that happening.
Well, not to get out my tattered robe, purple robe with the moons and stars and my fractured copy of the Magic 8-Ball,
mm-hmm.
but I wouldn't be surprised to see something happen down the road. You know, right-wingers hate regulation unless it's something they want to regulate, right?
Mm-hmm.
It wouldn't surprise me in the least a few years down the road to see the argument, because this is, after all, the same crowd that brought us, the Healthy Skies Initiative, which meant more pollution, you know, right-wingers, the Healthy Forests Initiative that meant cutting down more trees, all of that. It would not surprise me in the least, and I almost hesitate to put this out into the universe. A nexus with federal money has often been used as the means to argue in favor of regulation of a thing. And it wouldn't surprise me in the least, David, down the road to find the argument being advanced that, well, federal money really did go into the creation of the internet, and it's a federally funded infrastructure.
Hmm.
And as a result of that, the government has a right to constrain activity on it. 'Cause see, that's the way these doddering old fools in black robes think. So don't be surprised if that doesn't get some level of traction somewhere down the road, especially if the Republicans come back into power, because the internet, and it bears remembering, the internet is what beat their asses. The internet is what enabled the massive groundswell of popular support that propelled A, Democrats to control of the Congress, and B, and more importantly, Obama into the White House. Had there not been an internet, I suspect that McCain would be president right now.
I tend to agree with you on that. One thing I wanted to add was the fact that the real story that I called about, no one's mentioned it, and I think it's important, is that we've recently had a neocon rise from the ashes, one of the wackiest neocons of all, and guess where this zombie headed to?
I'm almost afraid to ask.
The Pentagon? Now see, here's the thing about it, Bob. This is why I bring it up, because nobody talks about it, and they should talk about it. Is the fact that, you know how people talk about Judith Miller? Judith Miller was just the woman who that fermented in her mind. It was the whisper that was given to Saddam Hussein. The woman who was behind Judith Miller was Lori Malloy, and she taught Bill Kristol, Pearl, all of the neocons, Hayes, Stephen, just name down the list. Oh, John Bolton, all of those people in the 80s. Now, Lori Malloy is a piece of work because everybody has distanced herself. The fact that they give her a Pentagon job is just insanity in itself, because she's been discredited by everyone in the community. Even the American Enterprise Institute says, she's not affiliated with us anymore. She's loosely based. And this is the woman. Now, I'm not making any of this up. This is the woman. I mentioned this on the show about 2 years ago as well. This is the woman who went over to Iraq and stayed with Shalabi personally.
And oh, wow.
She was still on that kick like, oh, I know we're going to find those weapons of mass destruction. I know we are. It's just bound to happen. And she was so delusional. Now, they let this woman on C-SPAN on a regular basis anymore, but the fact that she's working for the Pentagon is an insult on top of an insult. And the fact that she's working on, I'm not making this up, go to TPM Muckraker. I'll send you the link. She's working on Iraq reports? Iraq reports. Who
All I want to know is who authorized that one. Because if I was in the Obama administration, I don't blame anything for Lori Malloy, because she's a nutball. She's a freak. But the person who authorized her to work back in the Pentagon on the ROC reports, who basically, I'm going to put it to you like this, she was the catalyst for all of these neoconservatives to come along. She was that whisper, the fermented that fungus in their mind and said, no, you don't understand. And the fact that she was a Harvard grad and a professor, and she had all these merits of education, they just said, oh, but you got to understand, she has this figured out. I mean, they just listened. And this is exactly what happened with Judith Miller. She just fell under the spell of Lori. And, you know, it's funny because nobody talks about this. But we talk about Pearl. We talk about Hayes. We talk about Crystal. We talk about John Bolton. But we never bring up Lori. Lori was the one. She was the catalyst. She was the spellbounder.
Yeah, she was the one. Yeah, the Judith Miller was a stenographer.
Right. Judith Miller was the stenographer. And she was the one. She was the one who said, oh, we can sell this book. I know Saddam is doing something, and I know it's evil. She was the one who came up with the VX nerve gas crap. She was the one. She put it all out there on the table, and she said, no, you don't understand. This is what's happening. I have sources. And the fact that she went over with Shalabi, and she stayed with him, I don't know if they had an affair or anything. I don't even want to think about that.
No, that's gross.
Yeah. but technically, they did have an affair. It was a foreign political manipulation affair. Deceptions, but the fact they put her back in the Pentagon, and as I was reading the column, I heard everyone was just shocked and astounded because everyone has totally distanced her and said there's no way she can be credible anymore. But the fact that she's working on Iraq reports, I don't know if the Obama administration is listening. You need to get her out of the Pentagon because she has.
I know you've told that she, but how?
You know what it was, Bob? Here's the thing.
I mean, aren't there people, isn't there a handful of people from the last administration that just have blinking lights around, that just glowing toxic green?
I think the big signal, and this is why I brought it up, because again, it's one of those stories that makes me go, all right, I didn't care that she was back in the Pentagon as much as I cared about, okay, who authorized it? Who's the one who summoned her? Who said you can work for the position of the Iraq reports when you already know the destruction that she's caused? Now, granted, people, when you think about this, if she would have never met Judith Miller, you wouldn't have had that credit. She kept pressing that weapons of mass destruction line to her constantly. Judith Miller became an obeisant dog under Lori's command because she just kept saying, I know. I have the credentials. The fact that she was a Harvard grad and she went to War College. She was a neocon genius. She was also on Frontline too. I mean, they gave her so much credibility. It was insane. But the fact that she's back at the Pentagon again, writing Iraq reports, God knows what. We know what. History revision. Oh, there were weapons of mass destruction. They were moved to Syria and putting out charts and diagrams and maps.
Yeah.
You know.
I know.
I got to tell you. I mean, again, if the Obama administration is listening, they need to remove her because it's an insult to the families that were killed. It's an insult to the military. It's just an insult to government. It's an insult to decency. And here's the thing about it. I don't blame Lori Malloy for her mental illness. That's the other thing about me. I'm not saying she's a creep. I'm just saying when you clearly have lost it along those lines and you've proven it year after year and you went over to Iraq to stay with somebody to prove a point, to prove a political point that you were on the right side. I mean, there comes a point where you have to go and you have to say, you know what? You need to have all your credentials revoked. Why are you at the friggin' Pentagon?
Yeah, and you know that's why do you have a job? Why aren't you living in a car somewhere? Right, sure.
And it goes back to the fact of my only question is, I wonder if there's any way we can find out who gave her this position and who authorized it. Cause you have to know, Bob. You have to know her books, her stupid books. She was peddling Saddam Hussein back in 91.
But that's a symptom of an overarching problem, David.
Yeah.
Because it's the same it's the same thing with all these people who are professionally wrong. You know, Sandra referenced that on the show last night. You know, if you're Paul Krugman, or if you're Dean Baker, or if you're anybody who's actually talking about what's going on in the reality-based universe, well, you know, Krugman got a Nobel, but he anytime he shows up on the for-profit media, well, they've got to have some pre-planned the ambush stuff, talking points, whatever. And on the other hand, if you're William Crystal talking about the economy, well, hell, you can bat zero if you're a baseball fan. I mean, you know, not get a hit ever any time you come to bat.
Mm.
You can be wrong all the time, and the for-profit media will make you a millionaire for it as long as it fits within their worldview. That's the complication of all this. It's not a military. It's like Reverbo said. It's not a military-industrial complex. It's not a military-industrial congressional complex. It's not a military-industrial congressional religion complex. It's the money, and the money makes the rules. The money says what gets talked about. That's why you cannot trust a blessed word coming out of the for-profit media. Because, you know, remember, you know, look at any time there's a big crisis, all you got to do is turn to one of the cable news channels, and you'll see how good it is for them.
Mm.
They'll come out with special graphics and sound beds and dum dum da dum dum da dum, you know, war on fill in the blank, the attack on fill in the blank, and they know that people are turning, they're gonna, you know, just getting wrought by all of this stuff, and it's prime advertiser space. My God, you know, I happen to actually be on staff at CNN, David.
Yeah.
At the time when CNN figured out how huge it could be. If only it tried. I was on staff there when baby Jessica went down the well in Midland, Texas. And up until just not that terribly many years ago, I still had the email that was sent around to staff talking about how we had transformed news coverage.
Mm.
And that we had changed the media culture on what it meant to cover an event. And from that moment forward, And multiplied by a factor of thousands by the Iraq War, the first one, Bush War I, the light went on for the for-profit media in realizing more than they ever had before. I mean, you know, the Don Henley's Dirty Laundry had come out years before, in which he said, the bubble-headed bleach blonde comes on at 5. She can tell you about the plane crash with a gleam in her eye. It's interesting when people die, give us dirty laundry. That had been out since, you know, the early 80s.
Yeah.
But the lights only really started going on with baby Jessica and then Bush War I, and they realized how good this stuff was for business. And so no longer, and so consequently, if there's somebody out there ginning up crap like, you know, VX nerve gas or yellowcake uranium, The for-profit media will take it and run with it, David, because it's good for the money. It's good. Does that make any sense?
Yeah, it does make a lot of sense. And I think also the fact that the for-profit media and CNN and all of these networks, I'm guessing that a lot of those people were serious National Enquirer and Globe fans. They said, geez, look what they do with this content. If only we could make like an interactive channel or network like this and base everything around and just do sensational stories and just continue to pump out crap on a continuous basis. We don't even have to do any.
Well, here, you know, we can do it again. This doesn't even take any talent. We can go over and look at the latest news at CNN.
Yeah.
And there it is. Chris Brown case sent back to police. Horse in a tree pick may fund college. A celebrity breakup, then a fishy disappearance. This is news?
Yeah, you know, what's interesting about that is the fact that so many people have taken that. I think they'll still take that hook, line, and sinker when the country is in flames. They'll still be reading about Chris Brown. They'll still be reading about...
Oh, sure. Sure. And look, there's no difference. The celebrity tabloid press that was carefully managed at the time by Hollywood did quite well for itself during the Great Depression.
Yeah.
Because in the midst of stress-laden lives unmitigated by very much in the way of extraordinary happiness, people tend to look to those who still have something as a means of their own vicarious existence.
I think the difference is with today, with the entertainment industry from the past and today, they didn't have access at a moment's notice. They had to do those 1 minute film reels. Or
they had radio.
Yeah, and they had radio too. And but now they can get a headline like there's no tomorrow on virtually every single news network. Whereas something important regarding an issue with your town regarding coal. You'll take years and years just to get that one headline.
Yeah, but there are edges on both sides of that sword. I wouldn't be worrying about the bust in coal thugs if it weren't for the immediacy of all this. So the question becomes one of being able to mobilize our side.
Well, you know, that goes back to what I was saying earlier, which was if anyone knows anyone at any of these media sites, or you know, or you're in there with any reporters, pass this story along. Tell them what the Friends of Coal are planning. And if you have a pass to Raw Story or any of these sites, my suggestion is to use it, because it seems like you think what is going to happen is they're going to shout you down.
Well, actually, that's not the first plan.
Okay.
We're talking about a fairly limited space.
Yeah.
And what they hope to do is so thoroughly outnumber us that we can't even get in the building.
Oh.
Because this thing is slated for 6:30 Thursday night, which is when most people are getting off work, trying to have dinner. The only people who won't be trying to have dinner or get off work are the Fockers, who will be on a bus with dinner provided to them by the coal mob and a day's pay in their pockets for riding the bus. You see how this works? So they get there early enough, they pack the room, and then somebody has to say, well, you know, we can't let you guys in because, it exceeds the fire marshal's permit for people in this here building, so you'll just have to go away.
Well,
and then if people should happen to stand up and oppose this, then, yes, they will be shouted down. So, you know, I'm hoping there's some way. I'm going with full media battle rattle.
I hear what you're saying, and one last thing with the forums regarding posting. Do you guys know what exactly happened there, where you can't post it? It says the anonymous. You know what I'm talking about?
I don't know all the details. John would have to address that, but
yeah.
I know that he's trying to make everything integrate.
Yeah.
From the blog to the forum to everything. And as of talking to John last night, he had Excedrin headache number, Avogadro's number. Trying to get everything to dance to the same tune, all those little electrons.
I can imagine, and I'll see what I can do with a lot of those different forums and post the information. You say it's happening Thursday?
Yeah. Yeah, the thing is, say 6 o'clock. It may be 6:30, but say, you know, 6.
Here's the thing. If you don't get them this time, for I'm sure they're going to have other meetings.
No.
No, this is the only one.
No, this is set up by the DEP for the benefit of the coal thugs, okay?
Yeah.
Because it is a public, and it's not even a hearing. It's an informal meeting, and this is a chance for the coal thugs to show their muscle and let us understand that we'd better sit down and shut up and let big coal do what's good for us.
Mm.
You know, this is not our first run-in. Last April that the coal thugs came up and shouted down a priest and screamed at a priest while he was praying.
Hmm.
And surrounded us, you know, middle-aged, concerned citizens and affected community members, surrounded us, blocked us in on all sides, to make us understand that we could be slaughtered at a moment's notice.
Mm. Well, I'll tell you what. I'm going to email you, and if you can give me the all of the information to post to hit on the highlights and what and everything, I'll start posting on a few different boards and get some heavy traffic.
Cool. I appreciate it, David.
And hopefully we can get the word out, and some activists will head them off at the pass as it is.
Well, like I said, I'm hoping we can be doing some stuff live, and I will come back here and I will start writing. And hopefully if we can get it picked up to let people know what the coal thugs are up to, then, wait, stop.
Yeah.
Let me just, I feel kind of bad about using that phrase, coal thugs.
Coal thugs, yeah.
These people.
Like Fokkers better.
Well, they're Fokkers. I mean, they call themselves Fokkers.
Okay. But
I'm bothered by that because I have to step back for a minute and I have to understand where these people are.
Yeah.
We're talking about mostly West Virginia people. Granted, they don't live near the mess they make and the horrors they create. But we're talking about people with very limited education, a lot of high school dropouts, a lot of nothing more than high school diplomas, who have trusted the coal company hook, line, and sinker on every word they've told them. And they have been steadily berated, not by me, not by anyone else. The coal company terrorizes them at work, David, and tells them that the environmentalists want you to go on welfare.
Yeah.
They don't want you to be able to feed your family. Coal's been good to you. You better be good to coal and stand up, or you won't have a job and your children will starve.
Mm.
I mean, it's literally, and I mean no disrespect to anyone, it is a plantation mentality. Because these poor, pathetic souls who blow up mountains are little better than slaves. I guarantee you, if they show up in their masses, they will all be wearing they'll all be wearing the same T-shirts, just like they were in April of last year.
Kid Rock. I'm just kidding.
Protect the endangered species. Save a coal miner.
Okay. I was going to say Kid Rock shirt.
Yeah. Please don't even say that name, because now I got that stupid song in my head that you're at fault for in the first place.
Speaking of that, when they were advertising the Grammys, that's what made me even more distant from that show, because they had a huge damn ad, on a pop-up ad on the computer, and it had Kid Rock's face with that stupid hat on. And I was like, I can't believe you suckers.
And we were drinking funny things, and we were smoking funny things. That's some genius lyricism there. It just is.
And there's one more thing about with ads. I don't know if anyone's. Have you seen this ad of this woman showing her stomach, and it's like on all the websites?
Yeah. Oh, isn't that gross?
Someone made a comment. Someone made a comic on a chainsaw suit. The chainsaw suit, they said, how the internet was destroyed, and it shows a guy with a hat and a trench coat, and he says, are you the woman showing your stomach on the internet to all the websites? And then the woman answers, and then he pulls out a gun and shoots her.
Bam!
Last one, it says, problem solved.
Well, that's like the clean coal ads. You know, me being me, whenever, because I know the truth about that bogus marketing campaign, whenever I see a clean coal ad, I click it. because I know that I just cost the coal mob money. Maybe it's only a few cents, but I've done my part to pick their pocket.
I hear what you're saying. Well, I wish you the best with this meeting, and hopefully we can get the word out and to a lot of organizations and make them a little bit more aware. One thing that I just thought of is probably I forget what the name of that is. It Take Back the Media? Is that the site with all the addresses? There's one. I mean, there's a few that you can do media blasts to, but I was thinking probably it's best to hit up Bill Moyers on this issue as well.
I will do my best.
If you give me the information, I'm going to put out a full email blast and try to go to as many forums as I can since the head-on forum is down. And I've been.
I'm told in the chat room that that's on its way back as soon as it possibly can be.
Okay, that's good. But like I said, I'm going to email you, and then you can give me the detailed information, and I'll tell you all the forums, and I'll give you direct links, and you can see the traffic or the responses. And like I said, I'll try to find as many forums that I think that are the best places to hit regarding this issue. I have a few offhand right now in my mind. They will probably get some traffic and generate some interest, but I'm thinking of going to some maybe topics, West Virginia, and just different forums in general, and hopefully we can sustain something that a lot of people will at least be a lot more knowledgeable on.
I hope so. Thank you, David, for your offer of help. We do appreciate it. We sincerely
do. No problem,
Bob. Take care.
All right, you take care, too.
Bye now.
All right, bye.
Pop culture correspondent and so much more, David, calling from Maine. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hi, Bob. It's Cassie.
Cassie, how are you?
Good. How are you?
I'm doing well, I think.
So, I called to talk to you about the stimulus.
Yes.
And what is happening and how a lot of newspapers are lying about what stimulus does and are lying about what happened during the Great Depression.
Yes, they are. And those are talking points that are wholly driven and generated by the right wing, Cassie. You know, from FDR didn't, FDR made the, I've heard FDR made the Depression worse. Have you run across that?
Yes, I have been, because I'm writing a paper, you know, I'm writing a paper on the Depression for school. And what I'm finding is that a lot of the stuff that's coming out now about what FDR did during the Great Depression and what the results were and how it affected people, that it's all being distorted and it's all being lied about.
Yes.
And that it depends on, like, which, you know, and by it's being lied about and distorted by people who should know better. Like, it's not mistakes.
These are intentional prevarications. This is done, I guess, as they would say in the law, with malice aforethought.
Right.
Because you see, corporate America didn't like the New Deal either.
Right. Right.
I'm sure you're running across that somewhere along the way.
They didn't like the New Deal, and they wanted to blame the New Deal for the problems that they were having. But really, the New Deal helped a lot of people, and even stuff from the New Deal is still helping people. Now, like this many years later, there's stuff from the New Deal that is that still has benefits today.
Sure. One of the things that came down as a function of the New Deal was something called the REA, Cassie, the Rural Electrification Act.
Mm-hmm.
There are places in this country that have electricity today that have the REA to thank for it.
Yes. And also the minimum wage.
Yes.
There was a lot of stuff. And then
Social Security?
Right, and there were things that were built at that time that are still, now they need to be replaced because they're old and they're going to crumble, but we're still using them. And to say that, you know, those jobs were worthless when not only did those jobs, you know, I saw one article which just said that all FDR did was give people hope, but that didn't feed anybody, but the jobs did. And not only did, I mean, they gave people hope and it fed them, and it gave us bridges that we can still use now.
Well, exactly, Cassie. And, you know, I was impressed with something. Well, look, one of the most beautiful state capitol complexes in this country is that in Charleston, West Virginia. It is magnificent. It is beautiful from front to back, left to right, up to down. It's gorgeous. It's very reminiscent of the Capitol in Washington, D.C. And that was done during the Great Depression, you know, when we were broke. But it was built with the thought in mind that we would put people in that particular instance, the construction trades, to work by building it. The Senate office building that Guy James and I were in 3 weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
The Russell Senate office building is a magnificent structure. It is Depression-era architecture. And Depression-era architecture is absolutely some of the most beautiful this country has to offer, especially when you compare it with the concrete and just the blocky that we get in the 60s and 70s.
But part of that is because even the architects and the people who were, you know, had educated professions, even they had trouble finding work.
Exactly. That's what makes this the Republican and especially that so-called Democrat Ben Nelson such a sickening piece of work, is that he fails. He is utterly ignorant. I mean, as in not a very intelligent person, because he has no historical perspective whatsoever, Cassie. Otherwise, he would know that, among other things, the New Deal featured something called the Harlem Renaissance and the Federal Writers Project. The great actors got their start. Orson Welles, what's his name, the guy who said they earn it, John Houseman. Great actors were sustained and got their start as a function of theater projects that were funded as a function of the stimulus that was put forward by FDR. And it had a real and lasting reach in this culture that was good for this culture.
I know. But the George Will is distorting it, and other newspapers. And one of the newspapers that I read just flat out said that FDR extended the Great Depression on purpose.
Well, it won't be long before a rag like that publishes the usual old right-wing canard that FDR allowed the attack on Pearl Harbor. That's another one of their favorites. It won't be long before we get around to that, I promise you. Because this moment in time is presenting an opportunity, Cassie, for the right-wingers to drag out all their old hatreds. You know, as you look at the New Deal, as you study this for this paper that you're writing, sooner or later you'll get around to seeing the vote tallies on Social Security.
It's zero Republican.
In both houses.
In both houses. Okay. I know it was a zero in the Senate, but it was zero in both houses. Okay.
Just like there was not a single Republican that voted for the stimulus in the House of Representatives. The similarities are more than superficial.
I think that they should make Republicans read actual history and read, like, FDR had a fireside chat in April of 1938 where he explained everything that he was doing, and he explained why, and he explained who it was that wanted it, and he, like, talked. Like, they should have to read the primary sources, and they should have to study everything that we study in U.S. history. I think that the Republicans are just reading Fox News, but it's not just Fox News this time. This stuff I'm finding in regular newspapers that you wouldn't expect to be lying to you.
Right, but then look at the masthead of that newspaper, if you can get hold of a hard copy. Find out who owns it, Cassie. And you'll probably find that it's owned by a media holding company that has a vested interest in making in keeping people down.
Because they don't want to pay their workers, or
because
they want the depression. Like, I don't understand it. Why do people want a depression? I mean,
well, there are people on the left who want one, Cassie, because they feel like maybe this is finally the time when we get to put a nail in corporate America's coffin. I think those people are misguided, because corporate America rules this country, and they will never allow us to get near them with either a hammer or a nail. Then there are people on the right who want the depression because they think this is the Republicans' last gasp. Please understand, Cassie, if Barack Obama succeeds, no matter how much we'd like for him to be more liberal, and I don't think there's anybody listening to this show who is under the impression that he is liberal. He's not. But we'd like for him to be more liberal. The right wing understands that if he succeeds, then the Republicans go into the wilderness quite possibly for a longer period of time than they were during FDR. The Republicans are looking at, they are staring at their own mortality, Cassie.
So this is another case of putting the party before the country.
Absolutely. That's all the Republican Party knows how to do. The Republican, there has never been a time in this country when the Republican Party has ever done anything but put party before country. My heavenly days, and I mean, I'm, this is just by way of suggestion. Go look at the Ulysses Grant administration. Go and look even at the Theodore Roosevelt administration. Go and look for certain at the Harding, Coolidge, and Hoover administrations.
Those were what led us to the Depression.
Right. They birthed the Depression. Go and look at Eisenhower's administration. Even then, the Republican Party was putting party ahead of country. Because we were having a national health care debate that started in the Truman administration and was then put to bed and killed by the Republicans during the Eisenhower administration. Look at the Republican Party and how they rallied around Richard Nixon even when they knew he was a criminal. Flash forward a few years and look at the Ronald Reagan administration. Even in the face of full knowledge of the criminal conduct of that greasy-headed old fiend and everybody around him, the Republicans in Congress rallied around him because the Republican Party is more important to the Republican Party than the United States of America. The last 8 years, you probably remember for...
Not,
pardon?
That's why they say that we're not patriotic, because that way...
They transpose...
Whether they're patriotic or not.
They transpose onto us the things that they are. The horn psychotherapist Rick Goodner could probably explain that much, much better than I do. But what they recognize in themselves, they blame the other side for. Hoping to thereby deflect any analysis of their motives or of their fundamental principles. You know, you remember the last 8 years of the Bush administration pretty well, most likely. That was 8 years of party first. That is why John McCain had to make his slogan country first, because all we had had. Oh, did I hit a nerve? Did something? Did a light go on?
A light bulb just went on.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a Dickens when that happens, isn't it? So, the thing is, we really do have an opportunity here if we will seize it. The problem lies in the fact that we're looking at a lot of people who are so-called Democrats who are. I don't know if they're too timid, too scared. I don't know if it's the Stockholm syndrome. I don't know, but they will not seize this opportunity. How hard would it have been to look at this situation and understand that this is about helping the American people and doing the right thing? Instead, you get Ben Nelson standing up
standing up and demanding that school lunch money be eliminated from the stimulus. School lunch money, Cassie.
Bob, you know that there were 2 years in my life when if I didn't have free lunch at school and free breakfast at school, I would have not had enough to eat. That's important.
Yeah, it is. You experienced it. You lived it. And so have thousands, if not, well, millions of American
millions
children.
Of kids.
But see, when you're putting party first, those millions of American children don't count very much because they don't vote and they don't give money to your political action campaign.
I wonder how many kids that get free lunch, their parents vote Republican.
More than you would probably care to know. That's one of the greatest problems this country has, and it is shifting. But, you know, go look at the vote totals for the Senate yesterday on the cloture motion. Both senators from Tennessee, both senators from Georgia, both senators from South Carolina, both senators from Alabama, both senators from Mississippi.
One of our state, both of our state home, I think.
Well, John Cornyn didn't vote yesterday, but your other senator, Kay Bailey Hutchinson, darn sure did. And they all voted against the American people. Now, take a look at that map and compare where, you know, both senators from Kansas, both senators from Utah, both senators from Idaho, both senators from Oklahoma. You know, you can see that this, all of these are states that have lots of poor people in them. And those senators who did that wicked, evil thing yesterday are put in office by those poor people. Or at least with the help of those poor people who either stay home or go and vote for them. So, yeah, there's a lot of poor kids eating school lunch whose parents voted for the people who vote against the school lunch. And that's one of the biggest problems that we have in this country is, fairly simply, American working class people voting against their own interests. It is incomprehensible. You know, his name is Thomas Frank, I believe, who wrote What's the Matter with Kansas a few years back. That was the central focus of his inquiry in that book.
Mm-hmm. I heard of the book. I haven't read
it. Well, one of these days when you're up for a little light reading, just get your hands on it because I think it will provide a lot of food for thought, and it'll be quite illustrative of the problems that we face. You know, how are you going to – there are people out there, right-wing radio's full of them.
Wait, Rush, we don't need the stimulus plan. I don't want no government welfare. I don't want no make-work jobs.
Well, where's that guy going to be when he doesn't have any job at all, make-work or otherwise, and his family's being thrown out on the street?
Well, I pull myself up by my own bootstraps.
Well, what happens when they come take your boots, Cassie?
Well, yeah. And what's amazing is that a lot of the states that voted against it, that voted against the stimulus, are the ones that are going to end up having a lot of the projects.
Sure. Alabama takes a lot more.
None of them are going to say no.
No. They never do. Alabama and Mississippi take a boatload more federal money coming to them than they put in.
So does Texas.
Yeah, so does Texas. And so it's.
But you don't see that in the newspaper.
No. One of the things that I hate the idea that at a relatively tender age, Cassie, you are becoming a very jaded individual. I hope that somewhere along the way you're maintaining some contact with your idealism. Because you've got to have that in order to have the will to fight back. But you've also got to understand that we're talking about people on the other side who cannot be negotiated with. Who cannot, will not compromise. You know, if it had been left up to me, I honest to God, I think I would have let the Republicans in the Senate filibuster the bill.
And make them stand up there for days and days and days.
No, just make, let the bill die. and let them own it. Let them own it. Let them go home to the Alabamas and the Mississippis and the Tennessees and the Georgia. Let them go home there and see what was happening and try to talk that free market garbage that they spew so easily to people who are going hungry.
I saw somebody's Facebook status last night that said something about Obama got his so-called stimulus, and that it's somebody asked them, like, what do you mean by so-called? And their answer was that it's not a stimulus. All it is pork for people's district and welfare. That's all it is.
Well, see,
that's what they think.
Yeah, but Cassie, that's just lying. I mean, it really is.
That's probably what they hear on the radio.
Sure it is. Sure it is. That's what Obama was talking about when he said to the these Republicans, you can't just sit around listening to Rush Limbaugh and expect to figure out how to govern out of it. So, no, it's not. No, what you saw was the talking point regurgitation. As Obama noted in his press conference last night, there is not a single earmark in this stimulus bill. Not one.
I didn't hear that on the news either.
I mean, you know what earmarks are.
That's the things that are just for one district that a congressman puts in.
Right. You know, we're gonna get a new fire truck for the Busted Knuckle Volunteer Fire Department. There's none of that in there.
But some fire departments will get help.
Well, sure. I mean, before Ben Nelson cut it out, there was stuff in there for Homeland Security. Homeland Security money would have had impact on local fire and rescue squads.
If the Democrats saw that even though they did everything the Republicans wanted and the Republicans voted against it anyway, if the Democrats see that and Obama sees that, are they going to do whatever the next big thing is, or are they going to do it differently?
That remains to be seen, doesn't it? Because they've certainly seen it, haven't they? Not a single Republican in the House of Representatives voted in favor of the stimulus package. Not one. And this is after...
I hope they learn from it. I mean, like, if they had to pare this down and they had to, you know, take out stuff and whatever, but they actually learn that they can't ever trust the Republicans, then it's okay, as long as they learn from it, I think.
That may be a tall order, because that's the fundamental problem with the Democratic majority, is that from the time that we gave them that majority in November of 2006 to the present, they haven't learned it. This isn't the first time this has been done to them. Now, it's the first time something as stark as 177 and 0. Yeah, this is the first time they've seen something. But most of the votes are along party lines. Republicans do not compromise. They just don't. So whether they've learned from it, I like you, Cassie, I hope they have. But I sincerely doubt it.
I think Obama will. I think he's smart enough. He'll figure this out.
Oh, I think he probably already has. But he has a strategy with which he is working that says that he has to show the American people that he's bending over backwards. You know, why else would you invite a bunch of Republicans for cocktails at the White House? Why else would you go to dinner at George Will's house? You know, talk about that line from the 23rd Psalm about, you know, thou preparest a table before me in the presence of mine enemies. Well, that's Obama going to George Will's house for dinner. He has done everything he can, you know, right down to appointing a guy who once advocated for the elimination of the Department of Commerce as Commerce Secretary. He's done everything he can to be conciliatory toward the Republicans. You know, the night before his inauguration, he threw an honorary dinner for John McCain, Cassie. And stood
that
up.
That doesn't bother me. I don't care who he has dinner with, and I don't care who he makes a dinner for. That stuff, I just want him to do the governing part for the American people.
And that's what I want. And I'm not suggesting what was right or wrong in that. I'm trying to point out all these deliberate acts that Obama has taken to be conciliatory to a group of people who were, if the lights, you know, if he was in the room and the lights suddenly went out, you know.
Do you know that John McCain and Senator, the other one from Arizona, they didn't go to his house for the Super Bowl?
Really?
He invited them to the White House for the Super Bowl to watch the Super Bowl with him. But he had already said in the press that he was rooting for the Steelers. And so the two Arizona senators, they were in Washington, and they didn't go to his house.
Typical.
That sounds like junior high school.
And you're closer to it than I am, to be honest. And but I don't. Yeah, that does sound like junior high school.
That is so 8th grade.
I can hear the moral superiority in your voice, Cassie.
It's just like, oh.
That's too much. But he's done all of these things in an effort to make the American people realize that he really is trying to work with them. Now, all of this presupposes that at some point in time he's going to come out and say, I tried. I really, really tried. And he's going to have to tick off the list of everything that he did, and then he's going to have to say, and look what I got for my trouble.
And CNN and all of them are going to skip the first half of the press of that statement and just go to him complaining.
Right. Well, that's already been done. Did you see his remarks this Thursday night past? You know, where Obama made that remark about, you know, they say it's a spending bill. Well, what do you think stimulus is? And he raised his voice a little bit.
Yeah.
You saw that?
Yes.
Okay. The next day, I was on the road home, and I was tuned into the right-wing hate radio because that's what's on the air. And you know what I heard? Obama was almost incoherent with his rage. Obama, vindictive. Obama, hateful. So, I mean, even when we do stuff right, I hope he does recognize, Cassie, that he is trying to go uphill with one foot in the bucket. And that bucket is the media. Are the media.
Yeah. Well, not when I'm in the media.
And
it will be different.
I trust that it will, Cassie. I have sincere hope that it will.
That's why I'm going to be in the media before I become president.
I think that would be a good idea.
Fix the media first.
Right. By then, Rupert Murdoch will probably be dead, so that'll make your life a little bit easier.
Right.
And his wife's a liberal, and she's going to inherit all that stuff.
Oh, good.
There might be a job for you there. You never know. Cassie, take care, dear, and get back to work on that essay. Can't wait to read it.
Okay. Bye-bye.
All right. Bye. The author of the blog, Political Teen Tidbits, that's Cassie calling from Texas. You can go and read her observations at freckles.cassie.wordpress.com. And we continue onward. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hello, Bob.
Hey, what's up, Alan?
I'm in Texas also. I'm in Fort Worth.
Oh, my, okay.
Nice down here. The weather's pretty good.
Yeah, you're not up to your eyeballs in snow and ice. That's always nice.
Yeah, that's nice. Mm-hmm. Hey, you were talking about FDR. From all I remember is the older generation. I never heard any of the older generation talk bad about FDR except one man. He was descendant of the steel mills. People started the steel mills, so
right.
That ought to tell you something. Even people who voted for Reagan, they liked FDR. So I think if the media's going to try to turn around FDR and make him look like he's a bad guy, I don't think it's going to play well on the older generation, but a lot of those people are dying out, unfortunately.
Yeah, and maybe that's why they think they can get away from it. That generation, or get away with it, that generation is largely gone, Alan. I think my ears would have gotten boxed if I had said around my mother or father anything ill about Franklin Roosevelt. But they're gone now, so, you know, the Fox Newses of the world and the rest of the media, as Cassie noted, are free to engage in some historical revisionism, and it really is quite sickening.
Yeah, I'm proud of Cassie. I think the younger generations is real lucky to have the internet. I would have loved it when I was young.
Yeah, I sit back and think about that too, Alan. What would my world have been like with the internet in it as a high schooler?
Yeah, through the internet, I finally figured out what Iran-Contra was and things like that.
Yeah, there's a lot more on it than most, you know, there's a lot on it. It's not all just fluff. You can learn a ton of stuff along the way.
Yeah. And you were talking about Republicans. I think there's one Republican president of the past that is an exception to the rule, and that's Teddy Roosevelt.
Even he has feet of clay, Alan. While he was said to be the great trust buster, he didn't finish the job, and legal reforms were not put in place that would stay. And secondly, he was a rank militarist.
Yeah, I know that. That's the case.
Frankly, it was never to the extent that he was the good face of the Republican Party. It's probably because he was never groomed nor anticipated to be president of the United States. He was supposed to sit quietly in the background and go to funerals as vice president of the United States under William McKinley, who, sure enough, was every bad thing we've ever thought about the Republican Party.
Uh-huh. Wasn't he assassinated?
Yes, he was.
Uh-huh.
And so it was only by accidental necessity that Theodore Roosevelt rose to the presidency.
Yeah, and the things that that we like about Theodore Roosevelt, Republicans won't brag about, because he's the one who first brought up, I think, the living wage, what do you call a living wage, which turned into a minimum wage for some reason. Also, I think he's the one who first came up with the idea of Social Security, and I think like the 40-hour work week and maybe some other things.
No, he even intervened, you know, in the presidential history. Apparently presidents just love messing around in the professional sports. He intervened in the fledgling sport of football because during his presidency, football was very young and quite rowdy, and young men were literally getting killed on the field and grievously injured. And he stepped in and said, you either do something about this or I will use my bully pulpit as president. You know, he invented the term bully pulpit because he was forever going around saying, ah, bully. And he was that kind of guy. He said he'd use his bully pulpit to make sure there was no more football.
Yeah.
So there is some good and some bad to be said of Theodore Roosevelt. If you want to create a continuum of bad to good or bad to not so bad Republican presidents, I guess you would have to put Theodore Roosevelt at the far end of not so bad. But there were people who ran against him, for instance, who ran against McKinley, who would have been far better had they been elected.
And Teddy Roosevelt probably changed his tune about war when his son got killed in, I think, World War One, in a plane.
I don't know. I've never read anything along those lines. But you know, and there was a huge rift in the Republican Party that winds up with Taft as president in, what, 1912? When Roosevelt ran against him on a third party ticket as the Bull Moose Party.
Yeah.
And Taft hated being president, but still being a Republican, it didn't keep him from screwing up the country. some more.
Uh-huh.
Wilson.
And Hoover was next, wasn't he? Or came pretty close to that time.
Well, no. I mean, you've got the, then you've got Wilson, and he
Wilson was a
Democrat. Right.
But he was pretty right-wing Democrat, I guess, corporatist.
He was that, and he was scholarly, and he was academic, and a bit of an idealist. He was probably the biggest idealist that occupied the White House during the 20th century, with the possible exception of Jimmy Carter. But again, a Republican, you know, he brought home. Remember, Woodrow Wilson after the First World War brought home the League of Nations.
Yeah,
and it was the Republican Senate that killed it, and so the League of Nations went on, but it went on without the United States in it, and because of that, many historians have argued, you get the rise of Hitler and Mussolini, and everything that fell into place to create the birthing ground of the Second World War. And the Republicans, once again, the Republicans killed the League of Nations dead. And pretty much killed Woodrow Wilson, too, because, you know, it was during his stump tour to get passage of the League of Nations Treaty that he was pushing himself so hard that he had that massive stroke. And that was it for Woodrow Wilson. For all intents and purposes, for a number of weeks or months, Edith Wilson, his wife, was the President of the United States. She just wouldn't let anybody know. She sort of channeled his orders at a time when he was probably not able at all to give any. So after Woodrow Wilson... Go ahead.
So the League of Nations was what turned into the United Nations, right?
No. The League of Nations basically folded, and then you get World War II, and the United Nations are created separately. Because at that point in time, people had World War II fresh in their minds, and they saw what had happened by virtue of the United States' refusal to participate.
Mm-hmm.
And we stepped up and we agreed to participate in the United Nations, but then we didn't really. And you know, that's the whole thing with Republicans and Republican presidents. They are retrograde, if you will. Republican presidents go against the idea of a better America. You know, that's why in talking with Cassie, Alan, I said that, you know, the Republicans, the left sees just, you know, let it collapse as a means of creating a better tomorrow. The right sees let it collapse as a means of finally putting an end to everything they find odious and noxious about government. The left sees letting it collapse as a means of killing corporate America, whereas the right sees let it collapse as a means of killing government by the people, of the people, and for the people.
I think people ought to think hard before you even have a notion of wanting the government to collapse, because you know, a deep depression can be a real bad thing.
Oh, it can. But remember that even during the heart of the worst of the Great Depression, the filthy rich were not starving. There were plenty of rich remaining in this country during the Great Depression, Al.
Yeah, and that's what makes me think it's happening in this situation, that they just want to sit it out to the next presidential election or the next congressional election, and then they think that they're going to get their way after that.
Well, what they think is if they can throw enough rocks in the road to keep Obama from making any progress, they will then blame him for that lack of progress when they were the ones who were the stones in the road themselves. It's an essentially dishonest tactic, but being a dishonest tactic, why would you not expect Republicans to use it?
Because they're only blinded by money.
Yeah. I wouldn't say blinded. I would say seduced. But, yeah.
Yeah. I called your governor the other day.
Oh.
Governor's office?
Yes.
And the reason I brought this up is because I called them, and the lady who talked to me on the telephone was real nice to me, and I just told her, I said, I really like West Virginia, and I'd like to go live there someday and look at the mountains. It's a beautiful place, and I just don't understand why you folks want to cut down the mountains. And she was, you know, she told me that she would pass the message on. So maybe other people will be sure to call, too, and tell them you might want to go vacation there. You want to see the mountains.
Yeah. And, of course, where I live, and you've passed through this region, you know how pretty it is, Alan.
Yeah.
Where I live is the heart and soul of where people want to come and see the mountains. Of course, if Consol Energy and the fiends of coal get their way, there won't be any mountains to come and see. And the water will be poisoned, and the communities will be dead.
My father, he lived in the Royal when he was growing up. Have you heard of Royal?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Virginia? It's right on the... It's right in a gorge, right on the New River.
Yeah.
So you remember that. So when he was a boy, he saw the train, the New River train, from his bedroom window. And he said when he looked up, he thought it was a big mountain. It wasn't until he was a grown man, he came back there, he realized that he was living in a gorge.
Yeah, there were a lot of communities down along the river in the New River Gorge. Most of them are gone now. They were a function of the boom and bust coal economy here. As soon as the coal was gone, the coal companies left and took the economy with them and left people who remained to struggle to figure out a way how to survive. And see, that's the sad thing. All these friends of coal, they're going to be in that same boat. But
yeah,
they won't
leave and leave the mountains. When the mountains are gone and they leave and there will be nothing there and things. The tourists won't even want to come.
Right, and as the book says, those friends of coal will stand and cry, "Lord, Lord," and no one will hear them.
And where would you put the windmills?
Well, and that's the other thing. The windmill operators have made it abundantly clear that you cannot put industrial wind on top of post-mined land because the land itself is too unsettled. You know, they've basically blown the mountain back and piled some of it back up. That's not settled land. That is literally shifting ground.
Uh-huh.
And so you can't do it. You know, what they're doing up on the mountain near my home, that what they've already done, no windmill could be supported there. Because, A, you change the height of the mountain, and you take the windmill down out of the industrial category winds. And two, those windmills are, you know, 30 stories tall. Those windmills are the height of a 30-story building.
Oh, yeah, I've seen them.
And you can't, you know, it's not like putting a stick in the mud and watching it stay. If you put a little stick in the mud and the mud is too muddy, eventually the stick will fall over, won't it?
Yeah.
Well, that's the same thing with industrial wind turbines. You've got to have solid ground in which to anchor them.
Yeah, and they leave the mountains like they are, then you're going to have electricity from here on out.
Yeah, perpetual. And perpetual jobs making sure it goes out. That's why the coal industry, you know, doesn't want it.
Uh-huh.
Because they see their own death in the future of wind and solar.
Uh-huh. Hey, I've been thinking about this motorhome industry, which was an issue yesterday. After I passed these places where they sell those things, and there's a surplus of them, and I don't know that many people who wants to buy motorhomes. I mean,
oh,
crazy.
I don't know. You should see Football Saturday on in the parking lot of any SEC school or WVU or Virginia Tech. There's a sea of them. There's more of them out there than you think.
I mean, is there that much of a demand for them still?
Oh, yeah. I mean, they're certainly still out there, and they were being sold when the economy was good.
Uh-huh.
Of course, now there are people who have them and are losing homes and are glad to have the motor homes because they're going to be living in them.
Yeah. That's another thing I wanted to bring up. You know, I travel a lot, and I see a lot of RV parks. And actually, RV parks, I mean, they don't look like a place where somebody goes and camps for the weekend. It looks like people were actually living Might as well call them Bushvilles.
Well, that may be what they are. Of course, there are a lot of people, especially older folks, retirees, who are spending their retirement traveling around the country, and I say good on them. But yeah, those RV parks are—they do have an air of permanence about them. Down along the riverbank on the Tennessee River, where I grew up, there's a city-maintained park, and you can go down along the river there. And it kind of blew me away when I saw it one day. Whole bunch of RVs parked along, because it's beautiful. It's absolutely beautiful there. But a whole bunch of RVs parked along the side of the river, and lo and behold, they had satellite dishes.
Yeah.
And
people who travel do that. Even truckers have those these days.
Well, I guess I'm out of the loop enough to have been somewhat amazed by that.
Uh-huh. to talk about a bailout for the RV industry, we've already had a bailout for the RV industry. I mean, we really gave them a lot of business to let them make all those FEMA trailers.
Well, yeah, that's true. Because those were manufactured by the same sorts of outfits that manufacture mobile homes and manufacture RVs. You know, I've got a friend of my youth that I went to junior high school with, and last I checked in on him, he was working for an RV manufacturer down in Russellville, Alabama, and quite a famous one at that. Tiffin, I believe, is the name of the company.
Little nice ones.
Yeah, they're pretty nice. They're pretty nice. But the day of being of having the kind of expendable cash to drop on something like that, we don't get the economy well. It's not. I mean, but I think it showed the depth to which Obama has considered these issues, that he mentioned something like RVs, because it's not the first thing that comes to mind. But there is literally nothing in this country, with the exception of the incredibly uber rich, who have been served by this government for the last 8 long tortured years, Alan. There's nothing in this country that won't be touched by what is happening now and what has been happening and what will continue to happen if we don't get something going. You know, there are school plans out there that could start construction tomorrow if the money was available. Well,
did you say yesterday that one of the things that they want to take out of his plan was Internet, high-speed internet or something?
Yeah, there was $2 billion set aside for broadband expansion.
Oh, that could be the nation's public library. I mean, that would help business.
Sure it could. But it's also a means of disseminating information, and the last thing a Republican wants is an informed electorate, Alan.
I know it. They want us to be ignorant. Just work and go to church.
Yeah. Shut up. Work. Go home, eat, go to sleep, get up, go to work. Shut up, come home, and on Sunday we'll let you go and hear the preacher tell you that you need to be working harder.
Uh-huh. Hey, there's one issue that I never hear on the news these days, but I think it's a pretty good, important issue, and maybe you've heard something about it, is what are they doing about these stupid voting machines that are owned by private corporations? Now that we have Democrats in the office, should they be doing something about those things?
You know, there's a lot of stuff that has gone fairly under the radar, and that's one of the issues. I'm really glad that Brad Friedman is out there, you know, bradblog.com. He's keeping an eye on it. I check in there as often as I can. But it's been back, as far as I can tell, it's been backburnered, because right now the barn is burning, and there's this, look at all the stuff that's been backburnered. Torture got backburnered. Prosecution got backburnered, the question that Obama answered last night notwithstanding. Habeas corpus, backburner. Domestic spying, backburner. The occupation of Iraq, backburner. Afghanistan, middle burner.
Almost like we have Bill Clinton back in office.
Well, not quite, but what we've got here, Alan, is a situation in which Wall Street is crying me, 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 and Wall Street has a megaphone that drowns out the rest of us.
Uh-huh.
It's a mess. Alan, stay safe on the road. Good talking to you. Oh, go ahead.
Let me tell you one thing that I just heard on the news that I think would be pretty interesting. Is Iranian oil ship on the way to Saudi Arabia that had oil processed in Saudi Arabia crashed with another ship. Isn't that interesting? What's Iranian oil going to Saudi Arabia for? And they're supposed to be the bad guys.
Well, you know, that's an interesting question, but the fact of the matter is, one of the things that we don't fully realize about Iran is that they pump a lot of oil, but they have to get their oil refined.
Yep.
That's one of the ways that we've sort of kept a noose around Iran's neck.
So we're probably buying their oil through Saudi Arabia.
Yeah, that's possible. That's entirely possible.
Uh-huh.
Or they're buying buying refined gasoline from the Saudis in exchange for their crude.
Yeah. Well, I appreciate you listening to me. And
the conversations we have are always wonderful, Alan. Thank you very careful. Thank you very much, and be very careful as you go around the roads.
Yeah, and get PayPal back on your website.
As I reminded people last night, you can also PayPal directly to bobkincaid@gmail.com, and that goes straight into the Horn account.
Okay.
But, John Fox is working feverishly to get the button back up.
Okay.
All right. Take care, Alan.
Thank you.
Bye now.
Goodbye.
On the road in the Dallas-Fort Worth area this evening, our buddy Alan the trucker, and we roll along. Oh, doggone it. Well, so it's about 16 minutes past the third hour of the program. Your comments and phone calls are always more than welcome. You know the number, 877-443-2366, 877. The numeral 4, head on, 4 head on. That's toll free. If you want to save us a nickel or a buck, 304-658-3333 is the number. And, bear that in mind until we get the button back up on the website. If you just PayPal bobkincaid@gmail.com, it will go straight to the Horn account. That much is set up. In fact, the other one also works, too, but I'm a little dicey about that because it's a dead email account. Frankly, I got to get on the phone with the PayPal people and get that all squared away. And it's just another thing on my list. I just have to get it further to the top of the page. And probably would have today had I not been contemplating the news about the fact that we can expect. Well, it's not quite that gang of thugs in High Noon coming after the sheriff. But if you live here, it feels a little bit that way. And I'm not trying to be overly dramatic. It just does. Now, and while we're talking a little bit about the upcoming hearing here at home, the Horns' home, my children's home, my grandchildren's home, my home, Agnes's home, I thought I would bring to your attention an Associated Press article from February the 7th, about 3 days ago. This is one of those, oh my God, it's just too much kind of stories. A couple of years back, the West Virginia legislature, after a determined effort on the part of concerned citizens in this state, led by organizations like Coal River Mountain Watch and the Ohio Valley Environmental Coalition, got a bill passed. And that bill compelled the Department of Environmental Protection, a wholly owned subsidiary of the coal mafia, it compelled them to study coal slurry, otherwise known as sludge. You know, if you were listening, for instance, Thursday night, you might have heard Matt Norpell talking about some of the facts relating to a sludge dam. The fact that the biggest, can you wrap your head around this? The biggest dam in the Western Hemisphere is a dirt sludge dam holding back 9 billion gallons of toxic goo. That's the Brushy Fork impoundment. Bigger than Hoover Dam, bigger than any dam you can name. And we don't even know about it. And it's made out of dirt. And it's designed to fail. And it will fail. Well, it holds back sludge. Sludge is the byproduct of the process whereby coal is cleansed. Somehow that word's just not right in this context. But they use a lot of noxious chemicals and water, lots of water, to separate the coal from the clay and the stone and the gravel and the dirt so that it may be burned at its maximum efficiency, which, even in the best of circumstances, isn't much. Coal is a highly inefficient fuel in terms of energy generation via combustion. It can't even begin to touch natural gas, another hydrocarbon. Can't even touch oil, for those of you who heat your homes with heating oil. Well, the process of making this, we won't call it cleaning, making this coal suitably combustible yields sludge in amounts that make the word copious entirely insufficient. So 2 years ago, the legislature charged the Department of Environmental Protection, a wholly owned subsidiary of the coal mob in West Virginia, to study sludge. And the due date for the report on the toxicity of sludge was 13 months ago. They didn't, you know, the DEP didn't get their paper in. I'm sorry, citizens of West Virginia. The dog ate our sludge report. Lost it. Can't find it. I'll go write a new one. I'll be back to you in 13 months. Meanwhile, people will keep getting poisoned. Because the really weird part of all of this is that it was never studied for its toxicity, even though the coal companies were allowed to go ahead and inject it into old mines. Basically, you know, just have a great big conduit pipe, you know, kind of like that stuff that's under the road that creates the, you know, keeps flooding down thing. Giant pipe full of this hateful goo. Just pump it into old mines, what the hell. And, of course, it finds its way into groundwater. And it finds its way into the water table. And it finds its way coming out of people's taps. And it's poison. But 13 months after they were supposed to have the report in, during which time the coal companies have continued to pump this noxious, toxic brew into people's lives via old abandoned mines and via sludge dams that have no liner, 13 months later, the report's finally out. Yay, the report's here. Now we've got some answers. Sorry. No, we don't. This from the Associated Press report. 2 years after it was charged to do so, and 13 months after its original deadline, the West Virginia Department of Environmental Protection remains unable to answer a question that worries thousands in the southern coal fields. Are water supplies and human health at risk when a chemical soup from the cleaning of coal is pumped into worked-out underground mines? The director of the Department of Environmental Protection, a wholly owned subsidiary of the coal mafia, is Randy Huffman. He told the Associated Press, "We have some concerns, to be quite honest with you. We have questions we're trying to get some answers to make sure it's safe." Now, what this means is that Randy Huffman picks up the phone, or some underling of his, and calls Don Blankenship and says, "Hey, Don,
Reckon that coal sludge is safe? And Don Blankenship says, you dirty little greeny act, why are you even asking? Of course it's safe. If it wasn't safe, I wouldn't. It's safe. I'm Don Blankenship, damn it. Don't call me with that again or I'll send the boys to kneecap your ass, Randy.
We have questions we're trying to get some answers to make sure it's safe.
See, that's not science.
Again, and we've got scientists who are listeners to the horn who share their time with us. Guys who have used the scientific method all their lives, and women. People whose very day-to-day existence is all wrapped up in the scientific method. And I think they would tell you, though I dare not speak for them, that what you just heard was not a manifestation of the scientific method. We have questions we're trying to get some answers to make sure it's safe. No. No. That is marketing. That isn't science. If you start out with the proposition, we want coal sludge to be safe, and then you manipulate the data backwards toward that, you haven't discovered anything scientific. You have, in fact, engaged in focus group testing. The way you state that is, we have questions and we still don't know if it's safe. We have questions and we still don't know what the answer is. Science starts out with a hypothesis. And the hypothesis is tested via rigorous, controlled experimentation. And if the hypothesis is untrue, it's untrue. And if the hypothesis is true, it's true. But you do not set out to prove a given outcome. Now, if I'm wrong, science people, straighten me up. I don't want to mislead anybody in this audience. But that doesn't strike me as anything resembling scientific. And then a one-sentence paragraph in this article. Yet coal operators are still permitted to inject slurry at 15 locations. Do you need any further evidence that the people of this state and of those affected communities do not matter a tinker's damn? There's that phrase again. We all know what it means now. Do not matter a tinker's damn in the grand scheme of so-called representative government in this state. Randy Huffman, the same guy who is desperately trying to prove that coal sludge is safe, is the same guy who heads the organization that will host the ginned up, dummied up, faked up, frauded up, rubed up, thugged up hearing two nights from now in this community. I mean, let's come on, back to science just for a second before I blow a gasket. I am no scientist by any stretch of the imagination. I can do my ciphering and my gazettas. And I only know these words, I do not use any of the equipment associated with them. But it occurs to me that one should be able to measure what's in sludge and then having measured what's in sludge, measure the concentration of what's in sludge, and then compare it to a list of known toxins. And with that data in hand, in turn, make a rather broad generalization as to whether sludge is safe or unsafe for human consumption and human exposure. You know the phone number. If anything that I am saying is in the least unreasonable, I honestly want to know. Isn't that how you would determine whether or not? Well, I mean, there's another way. It's a little bit more brutal and probably scientifically unethical, but it wouldn't exactly break my heart if this was how we tested it. You could give Randy Huffman of the DEP a big glass of it to drink every day for a few months. Not concentrated, not evaporated, just sludge as it comes out of the sludge dam, sludge lake, or sludge as it comes out of the giant culvert tap going into the underground mine. Here's your glass for the day, Randy. You want to see if it's safe? There's no better way, right? Put your sludge where your mouth is. I mean, I suppose that would work because so far that's the way it's been tested. You see, up Printer Holler, where Coal River Mountain Watch is trying to make sure that about 300 families have some form of clean drinking water, that's how the safety of sludge has been tested. On human subjects. You know, the last time we had organizations performing brutal human experimentation, it took an entire war to stop it. But not up Printer Holler. Not up Printer Holler where the children's teeth are rotting in their heads. Not up Printer Holler where there is not a gallbladder left to be spoken of. Not up Printer Holler. Not up Printer Holler where we already know scientifically that the water is not fit to drink. No. Up Printer Holler, it has been a brutal case of corporate human experimentation. Not that anybody's keeping score. Because the coal company doesn't want to keep score. They never do. No, the DEP cannot say this directly from the article. The DEP cannot say precisely what's in that waste, how much is injected annually, or whether and where it migrates. Nor is it under any pressure to do so. The U.S. Environmental Protection Agency hasn't studied the practice in a decade and said in 2002 its existing rules were adequate to protect groundwater. How can rules be adequate to protect groundwater when you haven't any rules? Because that is the circumstance as it exists. In 1999, the EPA identified 5,000 backfill wells in 17 states, but estimated there were more than 7,800 others. More than 90% of the known sites were in Ohio, West Virginia, Idaho, and North Dakota. Even though residents of several West Virginia communities are now suing coal companies and claim to have tests showing their water is contaminated. They don't claim to. They have them! Showing their water is contaminated with toxins including arsenic, lead, and manganese, the Department of Environmental Protection, a wholly owned subsidiary of the coal mob in West Virginia, says it's confident underground injection is not to blame. Randy Huffman, who is too much of a chicken to drink the stuff, says the DEP, a wholly owned subsidiary of the coal mafia in West Virginia, has been unable to link the failure of a drinking water supply in West Virginia to an injection site in more than a decade since a mid-1990s incident at a Buffalo mining operation in Logan County.
Sometimes you just have bad water. Damn, this isn't some alkali pond in the far desert west with the dried up cow skulls next to it, Randy. Sometimes you just have bad water.
Huh? Sometimes you just have water with a bunch of arsenic in it? Sometimes you just have water with a bunch of manganese in it? Sometimes you just have water with loaded with lead? You just have it?
Sometimes you just have bad water.
Huffman also said, and I'm going to the phones in a second, please hold on.
It's better to be right than to rush through and meet some kind of deadline, you know, this 13 months later, because there could be some kind of legislative changes proposed as a part of our findings. And I'm more concerned, as is always the case, about how it affects the coal company. No, I'm sorry, he didn't say that. I am more concerned, as is always the case, about what I don't know. Jesus, we got Donald Rumsfeld again at the DEP. The known knowns and the unknown knowns and the garden gnomes.
We're delving into some areas where we're looking at the composition of slurry and the chemical properties of slurry and things that are a little unusual for us to investigate.
So we've had to learn some new techniques, said Roger Calhoun, director of the Office of Surface Mining Charleston Field Office.
A little unusual for us to investigate? Waste related to surface mining itself is unusual for the Office of Surface Mining to investigate?
Where's my tumbler? Where's the brown liquor? Because I'm going to get in it. That or go to the phones. Hey, welcome to the program.
Hello?
Hello?
Bob?
Bob?
Can you hear me?
I do.
Oh, this is Ange.
Hey, Ange, how are you?
I'm good. I was in a chat room. And, you know, you're talking about the groundwater being contaminated.
Uh-huh.
And, okay, I know you've talked about this in shows before, and show last week, or I can't remember, but about the mercury and the high fructose.
Yeah, right, right.
Scientists.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I was reading this article in a UK news news site, I can't remember exactly which one, but I have it somewhere, about this woman was talking about it and kind of putting the blame of the water being contaminated from these coal plants that people don't know about.
It wouldn't surprise me in the least. Ange, if you...
I don't know, it just... It's weird because it kind of brings everything together.
Well, everything is together, isn't it, Ange? I mean, that's the thing. This isn't a linear world we live in. The planet itself is a circle, and so is everything else that we every other facet of our existence.
It's like a puzzle. Life is a puzzle. You have to put pieces together and try to figure it out yourself, pretty much, because they're not telling you anything. They don't want you to know.
No, ignorance is bliss, not for the ignorant, but for the people who profit by it.
Well, you know, I went through my life most of the time being an artist in La La Land, you know, poets and...
Hey, I love artists.
Creative writers and stuff.
Yeah.
But, you know, when I got the internet, I'm a graphic artist and I've been on computers and Macs since the 80s, but, you know, when the internet got... It's like they were saying before in the chat room, it's like, God, if we had the internet when we were teenagers, it would have been awesome for people, you know, with creative minds. And that's why, and it's like, I'm so proud of Cassie and young people like her that are speaking the truth. We need more people like her that are interested enough in learning the truth and trying to make the world a better place to do something. You know, there's no excuse if you have the internet.
No, there's not. Now, you have to have a little bit of a, I don't know, a BS detector, Ange, because there's bad information and good information out there, and there's nothing to necessarily tell you one way or the other. But what you have the opportunity to do is get the information and then process it yourself and seek the truth. Seek, what's more important, the facts.
Oh, yes. You know, because I work with these people, some of them, you know, they're on their high horse. And, okay, remember October 6th of last year when you had Bugliosi on?
Right.
Okay, well, you know, it struck a nerve, and I usually don't talk about this sort of stuff at work, but, you know, there's a couple people there that I mentioned something about, so, you know, Bugliosi prosecution stuff. And they looked at me and told me I was crazy conspiracy theorist. And then today, well, after listening to the Obama news conference, last night, you know, when that guy asked him about it?
Yeah.
That blew my mind.
Well, and, you know, Ange, the right wing noise machine immediately cranked right up. Ari Fleischer, remember Ari Fleischer? He was George Bush.
Smart, Bob.
Oh, yeah, you are. Ari Fleischer was George Bush's first spokes creep.
Okay, I think I remember.
Little bald guy, glasses, lied like a rug.
Mm-hmm.
He rushed right out to say that.
Hitler twin.
he rushed right out to say that. Well, you know, we didn't have any. Let's see, what did he call them? In the Bush White House, we didn't call on .coms and other oddballs. You know, like the Huffington Post. Now this, then again, there. You remember Jimmy Jeff Gannon Guckert, the male prostitute who was allowed into the White House press room. He was with a .com oddball outfit called Talon News Service. And Jimmy Jeff Gannon Guckert also appeared semi-naked, down to his boxers, with his hand on his crotch. At a website called Hot Military Studs for You.
Reminds me of something about Rush Limbaugh with a pocket of Viagra somewhere.
Yeah, well, there was that, wasn't it? Yeah, and there, well, and Ange, there's news out breaking just this evening from the Smoking Gun that a Fox News creature has been busted for kiddie porn. A guy named Aaron Bruns, 29 years old, was found in possession of photos and videos on his computer depicting children under the age of 10 being sexually abused by adult men and women.
It really blows my mind that people, I can't even imagine thinking that way. These people are twisted. It's sick. What is in their minds to make them think that way is beyond me. I have no idea at all. It makes me want to throw up almost.
It does the same thing to me. But remember, this is the news network that, you know, we report, you decide.
And this is what the common American people that just sit around and think nothing and turn on the news are watching. And it's, to me, it's unconstitutional. You should not, it should be illegal to feed false news. There needs to be a law or something about this. I don't know, I'm thinking radically in another world, but I can't understand why this false news hits everybody. and people believe it. This world shouldn't be this way at all. It's not what this country was founded on. We ran away from stuff like this. This is why America was founded. And it disturbs me to all ends what's come about.
I know, and this is a call to vigilance. That's what this is.
I don't even like to talk about it at work because I'm considered a freaking crazy person.
Right, because you're awake.
Because I'm speaking the truth, and people don't want to hear the truth, and it just boggles my mind. You know, there's a couple people at work that are interested and think my way, but we can't talk about it when other people are around.
Yeah, I know.
You know? And I just feel like, it's like I said before in the chat room, it's like, I don't want to be blacklisted and, you know, kicked to Guantanamo or Romania or Poland or something. But, you know, there's a lot of people pissed off right now because Obama's thing with the CIA and the rendition thing.
I'm one of them.
There's people in other countries, and here, I mean, we could be shipped off to anywhere. No one would know where we are. We could be held, tortured, whatever.
We have court testimony, Ange.
It makes me sick.
Yes.
It's just, I can't believe that America, one of the, quote, greatest countries in the world, is putting up with it. And I know a lot of other people, if they knew what was going on, they feel the same way. But you can't tell them.
One
single crazy person, I can't convince people. You know, we need an army.
But that army's out there, and that army is growing. It really is. You are part of that. You're part of that movement. I don't like to use army because it's too militaristic, but you're part of that movement by virtue of your participation on the Horn, and you're being plugged into real fact-based information. But the other side of the coin, there are a lot of people who are who have gotten the information and are justifiably incensed over this. But there are also a lot of people in this country, sadly, Ange, who, if you say to them, you know, we have a guy in our custody, and we tried to get information out of him by taking a scalpel to his genitals.
Well, he deserved it. He's a terrorist. That's too good for him.
You know it. I know where you live. You know where I live. There are lots of people like that in both places.
That's not right.
No, it's not.
Disgusting.
And the question is, how do we make enough noise? How do we make enough noise?
Who started this country to be free of that sort of thing? And it's like people have forgot history and haven't learned from it. And it rages me. And now, you know, everything is turned pretty much, you know, shot. And it just dumbfounds me. And I never consider myself, you know, that smart. But to me, it's common sense. Is all it is. I'm half Polish. My great-grandmother came here from Poland. She never even knew how to speak English. And, you know, they always taught me, I was raised on Polish Hill in Kansas City, and they always taught me you cannot be prejudiced against anyone, how rich, poor, you know, what color they are. It's your heart that counts.
Yes.
And I think people have forgot about that sort of thing.
They've been terrified out of it. That's why I refer to this as the coward nation, COWERED, coward nation, because we are cowered into submission over the last 8 years, born out of fear of someone who is less likely to hurt us than we be hurt in a car wreck or, you know, a bad storm or perhaps by drinking poisoned water that was poisoned by patriotic Americans. You see my dilemma. Ange, I've got to wrap things up, but it's awfully good to hear from
you. Right.
I'm glad you've got a new computer and you're back in contact.
Yeah, I am, and I'm going to get to that tattoo, but what I was thinking, when I do this original art, you know, if you want, you can put it as another T-shirt on the horn site for people to buy.
Oh, heck yeah.
And, you know, it might be something, you know, cool for that.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And we will. So, you know, whenever, you know, don't let it take away from your paying gig, but whenever you get time, I'm looking forward to seeing it.
No, I don't, because I kind of started working on it last night.
Oh, wow.
So I'm kind of a perfectionist, so it might take a week or two, but I'm getting at it.
Well, I had a conversation with Nick, who, along with our buddy Benji, were the ones who said, you know, we're down to cover the cost of your first ink. So if they can dig into the wallet, I can sit there and take the pain.
Now, the thing is, if I do this, it's my donation. I don't need any money.
Oh,
you know, and I do stuff for Preston, and I have a whole list of stuff to do, but I usually always take good causes more than, I don't know, my selfish, greedy needs as far as me being an artist. Because I don't get paid
for
a lot of extra stuff.
Well, you will at the very least be credited.
Anything, but, you know, it makes me feel good.
Well, you'll be credited, Ange, and without a doubt, we'll put a photograph of it up once it's healed.
Okay, but you know, I was thinking about that. You know, looking through the horn shop, and actually, I tried to buy some stuff, and they denied my Visa gift card that I put in there.
Arg.
And then the Flowbot site that I did the donation thing for the Flowbot, they took it, but that one. The website that you have your stuff selling on, they wouldn't take it.
I'll be darned. We'll probably.
It's a gift card, is what it is.
Well, we will. We'll look at.
It blew my mind because you know that one site took my Visa gift card, but then yours didn't.
Well, we will look into it, Ange. I assure you. We'll...
I usually donate by PayPal every month
for
the last several. But I was going to buy some stuff, but. I don't know. I guess that Cafe Press, whatever that website is, they don't accept Visa gift cards. So
I'll be darned. I had no idea.
Yeah, they need to accept those because some people don't like to use their real credit cards, so they get those. You know.
Right, because maybe it's cards, it's a little more secure.
Yeah, it is. So I don't know. That's strange, but.
Well, we will talk soon, Ange, and good to hear from you, and chime in anytime, okay?
Okay, well, I love you and everybody on the horn, and keep it up.
All right, thanks, okay. Ange. Bye now.
Bye.
So I guess that'll wrap the program up a little bit. I'm going to save the gory details of the Fox kitty porn bust for tomorrow because I have a feeling it's going to result in me bursting a blood vessel somewhere. But it's been an interesting evening. A lot of great conversations. We have absolutely filled the evening with conversation. And I don't know about you, but that's the way I prefer it. So thank you. Thank you to everyone who called, who emailed. David, I will send you the details of the DEP meeting as soon as we are off air. Thanks to everybody who makes this work. I feel compelled at the end of every program to mention as many people as I can by name because the efforts that go into this are simply amazing. If you go to the new website, you'll see the new logo. Mike. Did that for us, and I've exchanged a couple of emails with him. Just telling him how thrilled everyone is with it. It's beautiful. It is absolutely beautiful. And Mike just did that. Our buddy Dave in Canada has sent examples of his graphic work. that he has generously offered for usage, and we will. There's Ange, a graphic artist in Arkansas, with a very personalized mission, because this art is going on my hide. It really, really is. I'm actually beginning to... I've been forewarned. Once you've had one, you want two. Once you've got two, you got four. But I'm going to try to keep myself in check. It's, you know, 46 years old is a little time, a little late in life to go overboard. But I really want this art. And when we do get it, I promise. I absolutely promise it will be photographed and it will be, it'll go on the website. Not going to put it anywhere. Nah, I think it's going to go on my bicep. You know, just on the outside of my arm. That seems like a reasonably, you know, if you can stand getting a shot in that, you can stand a tattoo. There are other places people get ink that they tell me is just hellishly painful. So, that'll happen. But thanks to all the volunteers who give of their time. Thank you to ELO, Sue, the chat room den mother, and also... works behind the scenes on a number of projects, has worked actively on the redo of the website. John Fox has driven himself almost plumb crazy working on the website and is still working at it, and his efforts are humongous because he also serves as our chief engineer, our resident musician, and web designer. Ben Birch you know about. Ben Birch literally is the most overworked man in liberal talk, and single-handedly responsible for the burgeoning presence of liberal talk on the Internet. If at some point along the way you got turned on to liberal talk on the Internet, it's probably because of the efforts of Ben Birch. Peter Godbold is a tireless IT professional, an activist in his own right, and always has time for me when I have some idiotic question, no matter how harried his life may be. Lottie works toward managing the forums and answers technical questions as well. Susan and Jean are tireless scourers of the Internet, and I wouldn't have half the stories I have if it were not for those two. Our news ninjas. Texas Betsy is our blogger. She blogs in a couple of different locations and is forever finding stories, one of which will have a prominent part in the program tomorrow, and sending them along to me. Out of all of those, there are still countless others whose names I do not mention for lack of permission. Because they are the ones who contribute, either on one-time or multiple-time bases, to keeping the bills paid that keep the horn going. That PayPal button is coming back in the very immediate future, for those of you who have asked. In the meantime, it's tied to bobkincaid@gmail.com, so if you want to use PayPal that way, just going to the PayPal website and sending your contribution, bobkincaid@gmail.com. It's not for me. It is for the organization, but that's how the structure is set up. And you can do that, and you can rest assured that it will go to good ends. The folks at Coal River Mountain Watch are the hardest-working, bravest people I know. And you hear a little bit, I hope, along the way that gives you an idea of how hard they do work. And how tirelessly. From the Coal River Wind Project to the Sludge Safety Project to everything they do to build, not only to oppose mountaintop removal, but to rebuild sustainable communities in the coal fields, their efforts cannot ever be overestimated. And their sponsorship is a big part of why we remain on the air. And always, always, always. Gina, it's all for you.
president wants to spy on 200 million Americans without a warrant. Has he read this document, which he was sworn to uphold?
Now, I will not have you libel Abraham Lincoln.
I don't understand the problem with registering guns. We register cars.
Mark Levine brings you the news the government doesn't want you to know.
Today, an explosive story about connections between white supremacists and Islamic terrorists.
When there's a conflict between Scalia's conservative values and the Constitution of the United States, he throws away the Constitution.
When you do have secretism, that is not what America's all about.
Go to Mark in 5, 4, 3, 2.
Good evening, America. Welcome to the Inside Scoop. Just a few moments ago, the Senate voted cloture, which is a nice formality, meaning that the Republicans' attempt to filibuster President Barack Obama's stimulus package has failed, at least for now. They got the 61 votes they needed, along with the 58 Democrats voting for it, and three Republicans coming on board. That would be a total of three, given that zero Republicans supported it in the House. With unemployment at record high levels, higher than it's been in some 25 years, going up from 7.2% in December to 7.6% in January. When you include Americans that are underemployed, people who want a full-time job and can't find one, the rate has gone up to almost 14%, 13.9%. In other words, one in seven Americans wants a job and can't get one. The worst economy since 1982, and it's getting worse as we speak. Our President Barack Obama says we're in an emergency. We need a stimulus package. The Republican response? No. No, no, no. They've become the party of no. With their new leader, who I think is Rush Limbaugh, they say it's Michael Steele, but it really looks to me more to be like Rush Limbaugh, they are hoping Obama fails and takes the country down with him. Why are they deciding to be the great obstructionist? Well, to help try to answer some of those questions, I've invited someone from the party of no, from the Republican Party, a frequent guest on the show. His name is Mike Lane. He's a Republican strategist, the president of Intelligence Strategies. Mike, welcome to the Inside Scoop.
Mark, thank you for having me back.
So is this the Republican strategy? Obstruct Obama as much as possible. I mean, he went, he talked with them, he brought them in, he invited them to help write the legislation, and all they voted on was a $3 trillion substitute, which got 36 out of 41 Republican senators, to get $3 trillion in tax cuts. Is that all the Republican Party has to offer, tax cuts?
Mark, you know, tax cuts are what's going to get us out of this economic mess that we're in. There are three things that the Obama administration, through their economic guru Larry Summers, said we needed in this stimulus package. It needed to be targeted, it needed to be timely, and it needed to be temporary. This stimulus package, if you call it that, has none of those three characteristics. There's nothing temporary about it, there's nothing timely about it, and there's nothing targeted about it. It's every Democratic wish list thing for the pent up for the last 40 years. Republicans will support a stimulus package designed to get money in the hands of consumers that they can then go out and spend and revitalize the economy and revitalize business. We are not, as a party, going to support efforts to accomplish every liberal Democratic wish list for the last 40 years.
Well, Mike, it's interesting because your new leader, Michael Steele, and we'll talk about him in just a few minutes, but he was arguing that it's too temporary, that in fact government jobs were temporary, and that's why we shouldn't have government jobs. Let me play for you what he had to say on ABC.
But outside of Washington, some strong Republican voices have said the stimulus package is needed now. Governor Arnold Schwarzenegger, Governor Charlie Crystal Fiona, he supports the package.